If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tastesofchicago.com to order today.
Start with a question for the assembled multitude. Sure. We're enjoying the fireworks from Navy Pier, but what is the purpose of those fireworks Navy Pier? Oh, just for us? How cool.
Now you know where to go when you need a friend. Just tune that radio to WGN.
That's right.
It's been a while since we've witnessed any Navy Pier fireworks. But also, these fireworks, they're actually coming from right around Navy Pier,
right,
as opposed to some of the other fireworks that we've seen during the summer that are much farther south.
Because we complain. So they move them, so they're directly in front of us now.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We got some cloud, honey. We really do.
It says here on their website that the winter fireworks are on Saturdays to light up the lake, offering a spectacular display for all to enjoy. So they're, it's a regular figure on Saturdays at 9 p.m.
at
for the winter
9.
Fireworks. Yes.
Okay.
And that just when our show starts.
Because in the summer it's been 10, because we've jumped up during the 10 o'clock news and turned out the lights so we can get pictures.
And every week, if our show is a little later, the fireworks will be a little later? Is that how it's going to go?
I don't think so. You mean next week when we start a little later because of a game?
Yeah, then it would be around 10:45.
No, actually we could be over at Navy Pier for that.
That's how everybody knows it's time for Steve and Johnny. The fireworks go off at Navy Pier.
And it was very impressive. I grabbed a bunch of pictures. I don't know how good they are, but I slapped them up on our Facebook page, and they come up right after the pictures of our trip into the radio station. Now, when you look at the pictures of our trip into the radio station, it looks like I'm in love with a Drake. I am. I think it's such a beautiful building. Tonight, the big beacon is shining, and it just looks so pretty, and there's so much traffic, and you can kind of get a sense of the traffic on Michigan Avenue, and that's, of course, all lit up. And maybe tonight we'll go home down Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, we may
take
a 2:30 or 3 a.m. drive down Michigan Avenue and see some of the Christmas decorations in the wee hours of the morning.
So join us there.
Yes.
Or not.
Hi, kids. Him and her on the radio. And post-Thanksgiving, we had a terrific Thanksgiving. I hope you all did. By the way, Ron, over Thanksgiving at my brother's house, we watched a documentary that I was not looking forward to that much, but it was wonderful.
And we had to talk your brother into it. He was outnumbered because he was kind of, okay, you're my guest. We'll do it. And it turned out he really liked the documentary.
Do you have Netflix?
I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the Elvis...
Return of the King.
Return of the King. Mm-hmm.
The Fall.
The Fall and Rise.
Already seen it.
Have you?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Well, I'm a big Elvis fan. I have the special, like, five-disc, DVD disc of the 68 Comeback Special.
Right.
Which has all the outtakes.
Yep.
And it's just fantastic. I knew the story... So what I appreciated about it was that it was bringing it to a younger audience that maybe didn't.
Yes. Yeah.
I liked it, but it wasn't anything new to me. I just liked the fact that they did a good job of it.
Yeah, they did.
And that was pretty much my perspective, because while I'm a fan of Elvis, I'm not a fan of the tons and tons and tons of Elvis movies, documentaries, blah, 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 blah. This one, as you say, Ron, particularly for a new audience, very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they had like Conan O'Brien in there, who has nothing to do with Elvis, but he was a fan, so he was someone you could relate to. They had Billy Corgan was in there. So I thought that was nice. I thought, good. Maybe they'll check out the 68 Comeback Special, and maybe they'll do the behind-the-scenes DVDs like I have, and they're just fantastic. Yeah. I can watch it at any time.
Well, a shout-out to Corgan and to Conan. I like both of them, and I appreciate their work, but I really, really was impressed with the things that they had to say, their insight during the documentary. I thought they really brought something to the movie.
And Bruce Springsteen, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
Springsteen was kind of goofy, you know. I think for a moment there, he went off promoting himself. And I was like, hey, Bruce, bring it back. Bring it back. We're talking about Elvis, not you. And that man looks more like Tony Bennett every day of his life.
Yeah.
It's freaking me out, because I'm like, he's Tony Bennett now.
He may go there someday.
But I liked that along with the 68 Comeback Special, that they used some of the footage from the early Elvis shows, like his very first show on the stage show, the Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey show, and then when they showed the clip of Elvis doing Ready Teddy on the Ed Sullivan show. I mean, that's one of my favorite clips, because that was how Elvis was live in 56. That was the original group, and he was rocking and sounding good.
That was amazing. The one thing that the movie, the Baz Luhrmann movie, did well was the stage show, the early Elvis stage shows, and the excitement and the energy that he brought there. I thought they did that very, very well, but they kind of distorted the story a lot.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, boy,
did That's
they.
Why I thought it was interesting that Luhrmann was included throughout the documentary.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. In fact, knowing he was a part of the documentary was one of the reasons I was apprehensive about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, for those of you just now hearing about it, it's called Return of the King, The Fall and Rise of Elvis Presley. And it's really quite good. And I'll just share your brother's reaction. He was watching it just kind of like, well, okay, my guests really want to see this. Family is, you know, they're kind of excited about seeing it. And at the end of it, he said, I'm pleasantly surprised. That was really enjoyable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, Elvis was sexy as hell in them in the 68 Comeback Special. I mean, who's not going to like that?
He had a black leather suit on, and it had to be very hot, so he had to think that looks over over comfort at that point.
Well, do you know the black leather suit story?
I don't think so.
Elvis never wore a black leather suit until that 68 Comeback Special. One of the people involved in the planning of the special.
Steve Binder?
I think it was one of Steve Binder's associates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were trying to make Elvis look as cool as possible. And somehow they thought that Elvis wore a black leather suit. Wrong. If you look at pictures of Gene Vincent in London in the 60s, Gene was the guy who was wearing basically the same black leather suit
That's right.
that Elvis wore on the 68 Comeback Special.
And let me tell you, the shock of shocks, we were at Graceland, and we had a private tour of Graceland, which was a really just a wonderful experience. But when we walked into the room where that suit was hanging up, it is so small.
Yeah.
I swear, his waist could not have been more than 28.
He was not a big man.
Those pants were so tiny. Looked like my Ken doll.
Yeah, they're like a high school boy, right?
Yes, I mean, yes. Yet, when you see the him wearing it, it wasn't skin tight on him.
No.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So, again, if you have any interest at all in Elvis, we all, I think you would vote, Ryan. Yeah, watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if you're not a fan, you could learn some things, and you may get more out of it than we did, and we all enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We got a whole bunch of things going on tonight. A little later, the Ides of March will be joining us, and they're going to give us a little preview of the Ides of March Christmas show. Then our friend Neil Sammers, a Chicago author, has a new book out called Looking Back, Looking Forward, How Chicago Helped Shape and Build Careers Over the Decades. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that. Tom Appel will be joining us. We'll talk some car stuff, find out about some of his latest road tests. And yes, because after last week, we have had so many people asking, is Johnny going to give a little more information on gluten-free holiday cooking? So yeah,
another
we'll do
recipe
that.
Tonight. I'll sneak in another recipe. We'll have an update from Gabe, because I've had more people asking what's the latest on Gabe, who was held hostage in a garage. Well, actually, he wasn't, but his car was. And people were genuinely concerned about him because it went on for the whole weekend. So we'll have an update on that. Yes, we'll even talk a little bit about the Bears with Gabe when we do Sports Between the Sheets later on tonight.
And we have a wonderful, I don't know if Gabe has heard this or if you guys have heard it, but we're going to play a wonderful song.
By the Swirsky dude?
Yeah, Dave Swirsky. No relation to Chuck Swirsky. It's all about what happened this week.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
Yes, he's a very funny guy. So we got a lot coming up tonight. We've got a number of people so far. I have counted 18 states that have tuned in tonight. A lot of folks came to Chicago for the holiday and found out that we're on the radio on Saturday night, so they've decided to
leave.
They left and then decided they might tune in tonight.
Oh, darn, they're in this.
We will have a little shout-out later on tonight.
Within the past week, I don't know if you heard about this raid. There was a raid it was $18 million worth of Gibson guitars and other guitars that were fake guitars.
And they look good.
Yeah, they look very good. Some of them look like they're autographed and everything else. But one of the things they were talking about is not only are these A, not Gibson, B, you got to be concerned with the manufacturing process. You may plug one of these things in and it's not going to do what you think it's going to do, or there are some chemicals in this that could make you sick. So really, 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 over the holidays, as you're looking for stuff and you think, oh, this is a wonderful deal, take the time and check out the actual manufacturer's website. And it may be a little more expensive, but it's worth it. And also see if you can find out for sure where it's made. Although, with some of the Gibson guitars on the back of the headstock, it said made in the USA. No, they weren't.
Yeah. The video from that warehouse, floor to ceiling, wall to wall, cases.
Boxes and boxes. And they're saying there's still a whole lot to be unloaded.
Unreal.
That's out in the port in California. So they don't know how many more are out there. But literally, up to this point, $18 million
worth
of fake guitars.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, Bob is here in studio with us. We require that he sit down for a few minutes before he starts his long shift driving the Zamboni around the studio. We came into a bag of goodies, and proving that Bob listens to the show.
This was so cool.
This is the greatest gift. We have the WKRP in Cincinnati complete series, and this is the one with the music on it. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and folks said, well, you know, you can't get it with the music on unless you
specifically,
you get the complete series. And there it is. And I am so thankful because this one DVD that Bob has included in the goodie bag is the Cop Rock complete series, which means we can go home and empty a video cassette cabinet of the Cop Rock video cassettes. Thank you, Bob. This is the best gift.
That is so cool. And I was telling
you, this is one DVD.
We may have to take some of the songs from Cop Rock and play them on the air sometime.
Or maybe not.
Maybe we'll just enjoy them from home.
Yes, you're right. Stephen Bochco, we talked about both of these shows the other night on the radio. And the weird thing is, you opened up your phone.
Yep.
Proving.
Yeah, that Amazon pays attention to you, because I had searched those on Amazon, and the first two things that were shown to me for the Black Friday deals were those two DVDs.
Isn't that weird?
That's wonderful.
And Patrick, he just says, that's a quinky dink. That really, it's not listening to you. I'm sorry, Patrick. It's too weird that it would happen like that.
But thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Yes.
That is so cool.
I'm so happy we've got. Of course, now when we get rid of that video cassette cabinet, our carpet is white. We're going to have a white square where that's been sitting for 25 years.
But one of the reasons that we keep the video cassettes is because we still have video cassettes from when we were doing the TV show over at Channel 32, and we have to find a way to transfer all that stuff to digital format.
That would be the TV show that the year you were nominated for an Emmy was the year that they canceled the show.
Proving timing is everything. Yep.
Oh, by the way, you've been nominated for an Emmy, but this is it. It was really good, and it was a good show. It was a public service show that I was the producer of the show, and you were the host of the show, and we did things that other public service shows weren't doing.
We did some things that caused, I'm not exaggerating, we're in the middle of taping one of the shows, and the general manager of WFLD was down on the other side of the glass because he wasn't sure what way this was going to go, just because we were interviewing Seika.
Do you remember Seika?
Oh, sure.
And they thought, and Julian, you're too young. Seika, so cover your ears while we talk about this.
Oh, he's taking his headphones off.
Seika was a very successful porn star, but part of the point of this had to do with she took control of her own merchandising and how women can take control and own the stuff that,
and this was
that other people
over
were making
40 years ago.
Yeah, this would have been back in roughly 82 ish.
Yeah. And she said, no, I'm not sharing my money. Yeah. I share everything else. I'm not sharing my money with the rest of the world. And she was really brilliant. Well, we've got to take a break. Stay with us here on WGN.
Sunshine, tears and rain, precious memories of years gone by. Eyes of darkness, fear and pain, all the time that we had. When all that's left is a photograph, not one golden moment in the sun. Doing what had to be done, living under the gun.
Oh boy.
I love that. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's one of Julian's dealer's choices, but we know what that is. That's Randy Newman from Cop Rock. I forget the specific song, but that was one of the songs that was used in Cop Rock.
Yes.
Randy Newman. So back what year was that?
I'm looking on the DVD box set. Stephen Bochco, could it have been 1990?
Yep, 1990.
Was
Under
it?
The
okay.
Gun.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It seems so dated, though, when I see the pictures of the people on the front of the box set.
But he did, Bochco did Cop Rock just before he did...
Hill Street?
No. I believe Hill Street had already been done, and I don't think Hill Street was Bochco. Bochco's next thing, because Cop Rock, I believe, was on ABC. And what was the thing with, was it Sipowicz?
That was Hill Street Blues with Sipowicz.
Okay, well, then there was another one.
Oh, it's going to be an interesting night. Julian, speak. Fill in the blanks.
I'm looking it up. You said after Hill Street Blues?
After Hill Street.
Hooperman.
No.
And then Columbo.
Really?
No. This was, I'm thinking ABC, and it was something that had like an NYPD Blue-ish title. And it was very successful.
Bochco's 81.
Bay City Blues?
No.
Bochco's 81 years old now. Boy, he was so successful. Gosh, everything he touched was great. So he created L.A. Law, Doogie Howser, M.D. For NBC.
Yeah.
And he struck a $15 million deal with ABC in 87 to create 10 series pilots over a 10-year period.
Okay.
So he was kind of like the Chuck Lorre of the 80s, because Chuck Lorre is incredibly successful with everything he has touched.
Oh, it was called NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
That was the whole name.
Okay.
That's what I thought. Yeah, 1993 to 2005, NYPD Blue. Then he did Philly. He did the L.A. Law movie, City of Angels, Total Security. That didn't go anyplace. That was only 8 episodes. Mm. Then he did Murder One, 41 episodes of Murder One. So he was really busy in the 80s. Then L.A. Law, 171 episodes of L.A. Law. Yep. So we got on that subject the other night, and that's when I was bemoaning the fact that we had all these video cassettes, and engineer Bob was listening, and his phone was listening, thank goodness. So it was a little Black Friday surprise for us.
Yeah, we may have to dig up a little more Cop Rock music at some point.
Yeah, sure.
You're so enthusiastic.
Remember, Julian, who makes the chocolate chip cookies, okay? You remember that.
I want to answer a text poured in from the 269 area code. This is Don in Kalamazoo, and he says, was Baby manufactured in Kalamazoo? And for those of you new to what this is all about, Baby is the nickname for my 1959 Gibson ES-355 guitar. And yes, Baby was manufactured in Kalamazoo, in the legendary Gibson Kalamazoo factory. And yes, I still have Baby, and I got Baby shortly after she was born in 1959.
Brand new.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You were practically brand new.
Yeah.
You were so young.
And that was, I've told the story before, but it's one of those things I will never, ever forget. I had been playing guitar for a while, was still in school, but was also doing some gigging and recording. And had at that point, a Silvertone electric guitar. My dad realized I was serious about playing guitar. And one night, he said, well, let's go for a ride. We went for a ride, came to downtown Chicago to a Lyon and Healy, which was a big music store in downtown Chicago at that point. So this was late 50s, early 60s. Walked in and went up to the area where they had the instruments. And he said, if you could have any guitar in the place, what would it be? And I thought it was just a hypothetical question. I looked around, and I saw this beautiful Gibson guitar. Cherry red. Went over, picked it up, plugged it in, started playing it. And my dad disappeared for a while, and I thought he'd gone to play piano, because he was a really good piano player. And about 20 minutes later, he comes back, and he says, okay, it's yours. And what he had done, he had worked out the financing and on a steel worker salary, because he worked for Southwork Steel on the south side of Chicago. That was no small feat. At that point, in 1959, that guitar cost $550. That was a large chunk of change.
When rent would have been maybe $50 or $60 a month.
Yeah. And years later,
But wait, the best part of that story is he knew going in he was going to get you something, because he had his buddy pretend to be from the credit department at the steel mills.
Yeah. He had it was Stanley, a friend of his who also worked at the steel mill, who was supposedly this credit guy.
So when Lyne and Healy called Stanley, he said, sure, he's good for it.
Yeah.
Sign him up. I love that part of the story. Because he was, in fact, the most honest human being you would ever meet in your life. So,
yeah, and not just because he's my dad. But
he was.
Yeah, he really was. And years later, I paid him back, but I can never pay him back for that. I mean, it was just a wonderful. And yes, I still have that guitar today. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's worth a whole lot more than that. Oh, since I'm staying with guitar for mm-hmm. 1 second. And today was Small Business Saturday.
Yes.
I want to mention a couple places. One in particular, Guitar Works up in Evanston. Mentioning them because they're the only place I'll let touch my guitars, and they do a wonderful job. And Terry Straker is actually back for a couple days. He'd been out of town for a while. But they have Sunday hours through all of December. So if you want to buy from a local store and
small
make
business.
Sure you're getting the right product, mm-hmm. not counterfeit product, it's at 709 Main Street in mm-hmm. Evanston. The phone number, 847-475-0855, and that's just off my head because I only remember things that
are important
to me. But for the month of December, Guitar Works in Evanston is open from 11 to 3 on Sundays. And basically, they're open 7 days a week from now through roughly Christmas. And good people, and they will give you an honest opinion about whatever it is that you're looking for. And, mm-hmm. and I believe they also have some sales going on right now, too.
And if you're shopping for a child, they'll help you get the right guitar for a child. Because as we've said many, many times over the years, don't buy the instrument that you like because the child might not ever pick it up.
Yeah.
You got to get something that is actually going to inspire them to play.
Well, that goes back to a conversation we had with Les Paul years ago. When mm-hmm. somebody, we had Les on the show and somebody called up and they said, well, should I get him, it's going to be his first guitar, should I get him an electric or an acoustic? And Les just said, whichever one he gravitates to, that will make him play more.
Yeah.
Go in that direction.
Don't end up with an accordion like I did. Because somebody thought I actually wanted an accordion. God bless them. Their heart was in the right place.
Your mom and dad were doing for you at that time the same thing my dad did for me.
Yeah, and somebody had misled them and told them that was my dream, was mm-hmm. to play the accordion. Listener from from a 630 area code said, I thought that the suit that Elvis wore was a very dark brown suit. Oh, no, no. Having seen it close up and personal.
Well, he would... In some of the scenes on that special, he was wearing a kind of a dark brownish suit. But for the in the round, in the ring mm-hmm. part of the performance, he's wearing the black leather suit.
Right, right, with the short jacket and the look that's very stylish today.
Yeah.
She writes, I adore Elvis and really dissected the color of that leather. Perhaps I've been wrong. Whatever color, he was sexy. Amen, girl. That's Melanie checking in. Also, let me sneak in just a couple of these. And you can text us throughout the night at 312-981-7200. A listener from 815 said they heard that Mr. Fix-It said on his show that he's going to space in Evanston on Sunday to see the Empty Pockets.
Yes.
Good call, Lou. You're going to love the Empty Pockets.
Empty Pockets. Oh, and speaking of Empty Pockets, we have some wonderful videos from the Empty Pockets. Mm-hmm. Julian did some incredible videoing, and they're not up yet, but probably over the weekend the videos will be up. So check our blog.
Yeah.
And if you haven't checked out our blog, you should go to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And we'll put links up all over the place mm-hmm. when the videos are up. But there are
three
videos, right,
Julian? And Julian, how many cameras did you use that night?
I used four cameras.
Yeah.
And there should be four videos.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Oh, good. Oh, they were just on fire.
Everything was on that
Yes.
night.
As were you. I mean, you did a great job.
I was literally on fire. I was running around breaking a sweat.
Yeah, this is true.
You were.
You did a beautiful job.
So keep checking out our blog. And also, we'll let you know when the videos are up. It's probably going to be over the next 2 days or so mm-hmm. that we'll get all the videos up. And one other thing mm-hmm. before we break, and I know we have to break. A little later tonight, we're going to have the inaugural edition of a new contest. It may be the inaugural. It may be the only edition.
The first and only.
Of a new contest. Called something like, I See What You Did There. Mm-hmm. So, now I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen. I'm just going to say that's when it's going to happen. When it happens, you have to explain not only what it was, but why it was. and what we did there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, see, that's called forced listening. You better stick around, at least for that. Actually, we've got so much coming up tonight, so stay with us here on WGN.
You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout, throw my hands up and shout, throw my head back and shout. Come on now, don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say yeah.
Say you will.
Say it right now, baby.
Say you will.
Come on, come on.
Come on, come on. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Time for some shout-outs.
Mm-hmm. We are really getting out there tonight, too, because it's a time of the year where the signals are stronger because
the shadows get longer.
That's right. Sherry Hanrahan is in chilly Romeoville tonight. Also, Davey, class of 64, Senn High School, Mount Prospect. Stacy Dreger is in Algonquin High, Stacy. Jim G. in Wisconsin. Sherry's in Morris. Bonnie from Butternut tuned in. JP from Peoria. Our buddy George from Augusta, Georgia is listening tonight. Is Sumone from Tarpon Springs says it's a three-dog night. It's 53 degrees in Tarpon Springs, and that's cold in Tarpon Springs. And it's colder than 53 in Chicago. I'm telling you, in Florida, when it's 53 degrees, it's bone chilling.
Particularly in our part of the Panhandle, because you're so close to the Gulf, and just the combination of the water, and it's...
And you know...
And it's one of those cold that... It gets into your bones.
Yeah. And you know who the Canadians are, because they're still the ones running around in shorts and flip-flops.
Yeah.
Because to them, it's great. It's 53, and we're all... Susan Schemmel is in Glen Ellen listening on her Sea Crane radio. Larry Mann is in Miami, listening from Miami. Vehicle is one of those songs. He says, I can't change the station when Vehicle comes on the radio. Good. Jan Richardson is in Chicago. Sharon Holman tuned in from Glen Ellen. She has a question for Tom Appel, which we'll get to in the midnight hour with Tom.
Very interesting question.
Yes. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah, Georgia. Robin Aiken in Port Charlotte, Florida. Sarah Jane, spelled with a Y, is in West Allis, Wisconsin. Ellen Maria is in McHenry County, as usual. John Couture is in Warren, Michigan. Carrie Carlson. She's also a fan of Tom Appel's. Well, thanks, Carrie. We appreciate that, and so will Tom. Priscilla Gilbert Steig is listening after a wonderful Thanksgiving. She's in Joliet. Beverly Goodall's in Highwood. Nancy Nosick's in South Holland. Terry Knight. Terry and Dennis. That's Terry with an I, and Dennis are out in Batavia. Susan Powell's in Memphis.
Memphis, thank you very much.
I thought I could get by. Lynn Kinzer's in San Antonio, Florida. Michelle Fairfield in Peoria. John Taff in Evanston. Gene Jacobson in Milwaukee. Roger Camp is in South Carolina, listening on the MyTuner app. Donna Youngheim is in Oak Lawn. Richard Wade, one of the Chase twins, is in Troy, Missouri. Rita Reggie's in Fort Worth, Texas. Sharon Malone is in K-Town. Carrie Johnson, Palm Coast, Florida. Val Nolan, that's Valerie, in Summit, Illinois. Marie Prudence is in Evergreen Park every week. Okay, then it's signed Sandy. So Nancy is in West Allis, Wisconsin. Christine Thaling is a big fan of the Ides, and she's tuned in. Diane Vasquez, who is our graphics guru, she's made us another good one for the holidays. Nancy Witt is in Milwaukee. Bonnie Pearson in Grays Lake. Linda Johnson. Hey, Linda. She's in Lake County, Illinois. Patricia Human is in Pennsylvania. Eric Baum is in Wells Beach, Maine, and he sent us an awesome holiday picture. Margot Moore is in Albuquerque. Albuquerque, Norm Rosansky's in Aurora, Priscilla Gilbert Steig, Helen Thomas is in Kenosha, Judy B's in Oak Lawn, Bonnie Nelson is listening on her good old AM radio, Chuck Snitchler, our best friend in Hobart, Indiana, the best friend of this radio station, Mags O'Toole is tuned in, as is our good friend out in Sammich, Illinois, that would be Bobby Danos, listening on his clock radio. And let me quickly check over here.
Doesn't Mags O'Toole sound like it would be a great name for a like a film noir detective?
A detective, absolutely. You're
Mags
right.
Mags O'Toole here.
But it's a girl, I think. I don't know.
Mags O'Toole here.
Peter Jukubowicz. Hey, Peter. Mary Lynn Pelzer responding to our pictures of our trip in and some fireworks pictures. So if you looked at our trip pictures.
Yeah, go to our Facebook page.
Yeah, I added fireworks pictures, too. And Bonnie Pearson is also tuned in. Let's see if I missed anybody real quick. If I missed you, I will catch you next week here on the radio.
Did you get Mike from Akron?
Nope. Mike, thank you for tuning in, Mike. And Ken Fallon.
Ken from Ann Arbor.
Ken Fallon is tuned in. Sorry for the late text, but you made it, Ken. Good for you. And again, if I missed you, I will get you next week on the radio. We're at 312-981-7200 or follow us on our Facebook page or sign up for our blog. If you sign up for our blog, we do not sell your information. We do not abuse it. You only get notifications.
It doesn't cost anything.
No.
And you can just go to steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And we really don't spam you. You just get a notification anytime we have done a new blog post.
Right.
That's the deal.
And not everybody's on Facebook. So that's why we want to be sure you know.
And that reminds us, we're so close to 10,000 on Facebook.
Yes.
We're what? Like a
couple, about 100 or so. So tell your friends.
So if you go to facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show and like us, if you would
like us.
If you would like us, it'd be nice to break. Break 10,000 before Christmas.
Yeah, that's our goal.
Yeah.
We got members of the Ides of March joining us in studio.
A stranger in the black sedan, I want you hop inside my car. I got pictures, got candy, I'm a lovable man, and I can take you to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby, I'll take you anywhere you want to go. I'm your vehicle, woman, by now I'm sure you know that I love you, that I need you, I want you, got to have your child. Great God in heaven, you know I love.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
I hate to talk over it. Like our listener that said, I always turn it up on the car radio. Yeah, it's one of those songs. You just stop and listen to it.
Ides of March, vehicle, and we have to, okay, let's start off by explaining what's going on.
Yes.
If you were expecting Jim Peterick to be here, Jim is not going to be here.
He is voiceless.
And we have to say thank you to Jim for not being here. And this sounds weird, but we always appreciate it. Anytime someone says, you know, I'm getting sick and I'd rather not spread the germs.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Jim. And we were expecting Larry to be here. And
Larry's under the weather. He's sleeping now. And Scott's in Florida. So with us tonight, we...
You have the leftovers with you tonight.
You got the rhythm section. Bass and drums. Big
Mike
deal,
and Bob are here with us.
So what's going on? You guys are dropping like flies. What's the deal?
I think Thanksgiving has something to do with it.
Could be.
Hanging out with too many sick family members, possibly.
Yeah. You know. All that hugging, hugging and kissing.
A lot of hugging, yes.
We had one rehearsal last week getting ready for the Christmas show. We got three rehearsals scheduled this week.
Oh.
And so, it's best Jim save his voice for that. And Larry has already been sick 2.5 days, so hopefully he'll be back and at it when we start again Wednesday morning getting ready for the Christmas show December 8th.
And one of the cool things is that you guys have been the Ides since the Ides
started. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 1964.
And 60 years. Do the quick math.
Yeah.
60.
Tell us about it.
In your wildest dreams, would you have thought that 60 years later you'd still be doing this?
Well, Steve, yeah,
this was always our plan, actually, yeah. Since we were 14.
When you were 14 years old, yeah.
We planned it a lot.
Oh, seriously?
No,
your dream.
We actually get people come up to the merch table after a show and say, hey, when you were kids, we had this all planned out. You know, most bands are, you know, have a run of 5 years. That's pretty long.
Yeah.
And we're very blessed, very, very blessed, health-wise and family-wise. And, you know, I've always said living on the road with a band is more difficult than a marriage because, number one, it's not just one person you're living with. Yeah. You're living with a bunch of guys, mm-hmm. and everybody with different personalities. Mm-hmm. We go back to the days of where Holiday Inn was, you know, the standard every night, and putting mattresses on the floor so we could put four guys in a room and live on the road.
Yeah, they're going to sue us for the extra
money. I know. I think it's beyond the statute of limitations. But, yeah, we lived through that together. And if you can live through that, you can pretty much live through anything, you know.
Yeah.
I was just realizing that you guys have done something the Beatles never got to do. You and the Rolling Stones started out similar time, and with all of the live performances, you have seen the change in the technology that allows you to go on stage now and replicate accurately the sound you get in the recording studio. The Beatles never got to do that with some of their later stuff in particular. They did wonderful stuff in the studio, but could they take it on at that point?
Sure.
Nothing had been developed.
Live shows have changed so much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The PAs. When we saw the Beatles in 1964 at Comiskey Park.
Were you at that? I was at that same show.
I didn't see you there. I was looking for
four of us. We were there.
$5 tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And what did you hear? A lot of screaming.
You heard nothing.
All you heard was...
They didn't have a PA. They had a couple of speakers set up on the corner of the stage.
And they were going through the PA, the house PA system, which was just those horns.
Yeah.
And that's, so, you heard mostly screaming. But
okay.
Do you remember it? Of course you do, right?
Am I right? Jackie DeShannon, Cannibal and the Headhunters.
Oh, wow.
The LS Jocks introduced them. And one of the things I remember, I believe the very last song was Twist and Shout. And after they did Twist and Shout, the band is kind of exiting to one side of the stage. But John Lennon freaks everybody out because he starts running down the other side of the stage towards the crowd for a second. And everybody went nuts. And then he ran back up and went off with the rest of the members of the Beatles.
You have a better memory than I do. I don't remember that. But
I don't know if
just
I remember you being there, Bob.
But the technology, we used to carry our own PA with us because we didn't know what we were going to run into.
Right.
And we had custom things we built to hold the speakers with a metal tripod. One gig, the thing fell over. Somebody could have been really hurt. But, I mean, it was it was like being cavemen back then on stage. And the amps and everything else and the technology. I mean, and then the studios themselves.
Yeah.
You know, when we were recording on 4-track and, good Lord, things changed. So I remember the first time we were in sound studios and Stu Black, the engineer, comes in and shows us a cassette tape. He said, this is the wave of the future.
Yep.
Oh.
Little did he know where we'd be today.
Yep.
Yeah.
I still have a lot of those cassettes.
Yeah, I have a few.
There's a funny T-shirt now that shows cassettes and mini discs and CDs and says, I'm this old. That's what the T-shirt says, because you probably don't know what you're looking at, right?
I still have 4-track tapes.
Yeah.
Well, how many kids don't know what vinyl? I mean, vinyl.
Well, it's very popular now.
Vinyl has come back. In fact, over the past year, vinyl has outsold every other form of
music media. Streaming.
I'm trying to think of what the term is. Of
something you can hold.
Physical music media.
Physical.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right. So,
in fact, we just had our friends from the Empty Pockets in the studio last week. And they've got a brand new album out. It's a two album set, and it's vinyl.
And it's heavy.
And there is the demand for that.
And done right here in Chicago, too.
Yeah.
And you guys have always been in Chicago, from Berwyn, right?
That's right.
Always did all your recording here, too.
Berwyn!
Yes.
Yeah, we've, now, we're you all live in the suburbs. Or Mike's still in Chicago proper.
Yeah, I'm still downtown.
We're all around and, you know, in the various suburbs. But we never lost track of our roots here. And
right.
It's a great, number one, it's a great music town to be from. Back in the 60s, there were places for teenagers like us to play.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what an advantage we had back then that you really don't have today.
Yeah.
To work your chops and and get experience with a live audience. It seems today a lot of these younger people that make it, they go right from the studio and having a hit or being, having something that's a stream
on YouTube
hit,
or TikTok or something.
They're in stadiums.
Yeah.
How do you refine and your craft? You
know? We've had them in here and say, well, yeah, I made this CD in my bedroom.
Yeah.
And now, I'm playing to a couple thousand people.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing. Mike, when you joined, when the band started, were you the drummer? Is that how you started out as drums from the beginning?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I was...
auditioned?
I wasn't their starter drummer. They had a starter drummer.
Okay. Now, were you guys the Shondells then?
The Shondells, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And
Not to be confused with the other Shondells, because you were the Shondash D-E-L.
Before Tommy James and
the... Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why we had to change our name.
Oh, I guess I didn't know that.
We had recorded You Wouldn't Listen as the Shondells. And... They were going to release it, and then Tommy James comes out with Hanky Panky.
No.
Oh my gosh, we can't release this. We can't do this now.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be too much confusion.
Wow.
And we had built a reputation as the Shondells, playing at high schools and wherever we could get a gig. So the name had some validity in Chicago.
Sure.
But Tommy, Hanky Panky was like the fastest rising song.
Yeah.
That era.
Yeah.
And
literally what are we going to do? And so our managers, at that time, Batman was the big thing on TV, mm-hmm. and they came up with the brilliant idea of calling us Batman and the Boy Wonders.
Look at Mike's reaction. He still relives that nightmare.
But even 2 weeks that will live in infamy.
Yeah. Even at 15 and 16, we revolted. That lasted about 6 weeks. We played a couple gigs as Batman and the Boy Wonders, but we were working on a new name, and that's when I was in English Lit, reading Julius Caesar, and I came across the phrase, Beware the Ides of March.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It still holds up very well today.
It sure does.
You think?
And I love the fact when you Google it, it comes up the Ides of March, as in the Julius Caesar reference, and then Ides of March, the band.
Well, if you're going to look for a name of a band, I always suggest find a great writer. Number two, make sure he's dead, so you don't get sued for plagiarism.
Yes,
his lawyer's calling us.
Yeah,
Shakespeare's lawyers.
Yeah, from the estate. So we're pretty safe with the name. We've never had a conflict.
Oh, that's great.
We played the Cellar back when it was in the church building in Arlington Heights before it moved to the big warehouse Cellar.
Oh, sure.
When it was back in the early days, so we played there the first gig. Wow, we got a gig at the Cellar because the Shadows had played there and Saturday's Children, and we were so proud and happy to be there. We had to go in as Batman and the Boy Wonders.
Oh.
And I had a black vinyl bat pasted on my drum head.
I can't believe we've never heard this part of your history.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that'll teach the guys to get sick and not show up. We'll get the whole story.
I want to play one of my favorite Ides of March songs that may not be one of the best known Ides of March songs, but I believe, Mike, you may have had a co-write on this song. It's one of my absolute favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
So, Last Band Standing, one of my all-time favorite Ides of March songs. And didn't you write that with Jim, or how did that come about?
I had come up with a number of little lyric snippets, and I walked into Jim's one day and I said, we got to open with this. In California. And he said, that's great. That's a great. We're going to do this. And it was just basically a story about the history of the band.
And then you got Steve Cropper to work with you on the...
played a show with him, a private party for a good charity. And Steve was in town, and just the greatest guy, the nicest guy. We asked him, hey, if you're going to stick around for a day, why could you come and play on a song for us? It'd be great. And he said, yeah. So he came and gave his famous licks and added them onto the song.
Yeah. We got to back up Steve Cropper.
That
was wasn't on the bucket list, but it sure made the top 10.
Yeah. For me, you know? playing his songs behind him at the party was the greatest thrill.
Hmm. But the blatant plug light is started flashing. So, blatant plug. It's Christmas show, and for people who have never seen this, you need to see this. It's actually two shows in one. You want to explain what it is and where it's going on and how people can get tickets?
Well, sure. I think we've been doing the Christmas show close to 20 years now, and we'll do only one or two a year, obviously in December. And over the years, developed our own repertoire of Christmas songs, originals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And here we've got some great writers in the band, most notably Jim, and with some great songs and great lyrics. Scott also has been a big contributor to those. So we do a lot of the originals that we've written and a couple traditional Christmas songs, and that's the first half of the show. And then the second half of the show, we try to hit a bunch of the hits that we've done along the way and Jim's written along the way, 38 Special, Survivor, obviously, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a fun time, and everybody seems to enjoy themselves, and we do. We've got video content going on in back of us with Christmas themes and pictures of the band going way back, all the way back to the 70s and Steel Pier in Atlantic City following the Diving Horse, true story. Can't make this stuff up. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of fun. And it's very family-oriented and very rock and roll-oriented, but still a Christmas theme.
So it's kind of a combination of a Christmas show and the Eras Tour before Taylor Swift thought of it.
Yes.
Because you really do cover, and I believe in the Christmas part, you all do some solo stuff too, which is, I love that.
And solo stuff and some harmony stuff featuring the Ides vocals,
and the horns.
I love, plus the horn section. They do the horn section does their own thing too. They
do a little jazz piece.
This year it'll be a jazz version of We Three Kings.
Oh, cool.
We also have a guest, Toby Hitchcock.
From Pride of Lions.
From Pride of Lions, right. Yeah. He's just got one incredible voice.
Oh, he doesn't need a microphone.
No.
Let me tell you, we had him in studio.
The first time we thought they're hearing this out on Michigan Avenue.
Power.
Yeah, he's got that arena rock voice.
Well, he sure does.
But now we've teased everybody. So where, when, how do you get tickets?
December 8th, Sunday. It's a matinee, 3:00, and it's at the Arcata Theater in downtown St. Charles.
Which is a wonderful,
beautiful
venue.
Auditorium.
The acoustics are so good in that place.
During COVID, they rehabbed the whole place. It's beautiful.
Oh.
Ron Onesti has done a terrific job with really...
I think Ron is living his dream.
Yeah.
You know, I think he woke up one day and he said, you know what? I think I want to have my own theater. And now he's got that one and the Desplaines Theater.
He's got the restaurants going. Yeah. There's places to eat. Downtown St. Charles is fabulous. I live there. I know it. Mm-hmm. So I can't rave any more about it. And so you can come and then go out for dinner after the show in St. Mm-hmm. Charles. You get your tickets. Look at oshows.com. Mm-hmm. Oshows for Ron Onesti, oshows.com. And tickets are available.
3:00. And I would say, because there is an intermission, it's a good 2.5-3 hour.
Not 3 hours. It's more like about 2 hours and 10 minutes or so. Something like that.
You scaled it down. The one that we did was 3 hours.
Well,
we're a little more mature than we have been in past years.
Yeah,
so.
Our knees don't last more than 2.5 hours. So we.
I'll never forget the last time we were out there.
I think that was their 10th
show.
I think that was the 10th Christmas show you did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're backstage, and Jim comes back wearing a guitar and a mink coat. Yeah, that's Jim.
Yeah. A full big full coat. Like if you fall in it, you won't feel anything.
And you guys were nice enough to let me join you on stage and play guitar on Rock and Roll for Christmas.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Pictures just came up the other day because you guys did WGN TV too.
In fact,
before that,
I was surprised because I was doing a search for some Ides of March stuff, and there is a video of that performance somewhere on YouTube.
Hmm.
I think there's everything on YouTube.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. Be careful what you do because it will be on YouTube at some point.
Absolutely.
So, again, oshows.com. And it is, and we'll tell you from our experience, it is a show that the kids will really, really love because it's high energy.
You have to be careful on websites these days because if you put in Arcata Theater, there's other sponsored ticket brokers that are reselling tickets at a higher price.
Oh.
And the first time this happened was like about 5 years ago. People were saying, geez, the shrimps are really expensive. And I said, why is it? And so the next day I went online, they're getting fooled into buying more expensive tickets. So make sure you go to the actual venue's website, Oshows, and
you don't get
scalped.
Did you hear about the incredible faux pas? And I know we got to break, so I'll make this quick. The incredible faux pas with the movie Wicked.
Oh yes.
In their marketing, they put out this marketing, and it just said, "Go to wicked.com." Wicked.com is a porn site.
Oh no!
That was on the Wicked doll movie.com. That was on the doll.
On the doll.
When you got the doll, you went, "Oh, I want to find out more about my doll."
Woo! So point is, be very careful when you're going to websites, boys and girls. Okay, with that cautionary tale, we will now break and come back with some of the Ides of March. Stay with us.
California, we met the man who chose our fate. Down at the whiskey, he slapped us on the back, told us we're great. But in the end, he let us dangle, left us on our own to carry the weight.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's the song I was talking about. Ides of March, the last band standing. That is such a groove. Oh, I love that.
We got two members of the band standing tonight.
Yes.
We have with us in studio. And again, that's the voice of Jim Peterick. Jim is saving his voice because he's been under the weather. We've got the big Christmas show coming up a week from tomorrow, the 8th of December.
And Larry was supposed to be here, but he's not feeling good tonight.
Nope.
So in the studio with us, we have Bob Berglund. He plays bass and sax and does vocals. And Mike is playing the drums and doing vocals. Bob, how did you decide to go from bass and sax? That's an odd combination.
Well, I, like a lot of kids, you get forced by your parents to play piano, take piano lessons, right?
Or accordion, in my case.
Accordion, absolutely. Certainly back in the 50s. And I was one of those kids playing piano, and I really didn't like it. It was solo and practicing by yourself, and it was classical, and I really didn't like it. But then started in band playing clarinet in the grade school band. We had a great feeder program, great teachers and band directors. And I loved clarinet, and I think a lot of it was the competition, and I got pretty good at it. But I never made any money playing clarinet. And I always, my thing was, I was hooked on the folk music of the 1960s and watching bands like the Kingston Trio, the Chad Mitchell Trio, Peter Paul and Mary Band. I just liked, I thought it was so cool, those guys standing there singing with guitars. Mm-hmm. And that's what got me hooked. I begged my parents for a guitar for my eighth grade graduation. I got a guitar purchased with S&H green stamps.
Oh, yes.
From Weebolts and Goldblatts.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. And the strings were about a full inch off the fretboard.
Oh, yeah.
I bought the Mel Bay chord book, taught myself some chords.
And your fingers bled.
And, yeah, I got the calluses. And Larry calls one day and says, you know, I'm starting a band. This is just before the Beatles broke. And I said, you want to join my band? I said, yeah, who's in it? He said, just you and me then. And I said, that's not a band, that's a duet. So then we recruited Jim, and we got a drummer for about 6 weeks. And his dad wasn't into rock and roll, and we found Mike.
All right.
Mike was the secret sauce.
He just got me because I could drive.
Yeah, he was the oldest. He had a driver's license, so we could get the gigs.
Wait, you were 15 and they were 14?
Yeah. I was 16.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
I just got my license. I got it on my birthday, on the 16th birthday.
Yeah, I had the worst guitar. So I went from guitar, okay, you play bass. That's how I got started on bass.
Okay.
Clarinet, easy switch to saxophone.
Okay.
So, and I played on vehicle, I played saxophone, not bass.
Okay. Yeah.
So
I guess I didn't know that.
Yeah.
We actually all started, we got to know each other in grade school band, in the District 100 band.
In Berwyn.
In Berwyn. There were seven grade schools that fed the district band. And I was in percussion. Larry actually ended up playing in percussion as well. And Jimmy played sax, and Bob played clarinet. And there's a picture of us. Not really knowing or hanging out with each other, but there we are in the band, all of us.
Wow.
Great school early, band, yeah.
That's so amazing. So that was over 60 years ago then.
Yeah.
Graduated in 63. This would be 62.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And Mike, I have to ask you, who was your biggest influence as a drummer? And the reason I ask that, you have such a, and I'm not saying this just because you're in the studio, you have such a steady, solid groove. And one of the things back in the day when I was performing with bands, I would hate it when you would get a drummer who would kind of speed up through the song. You don't do that. You're solid. You're locked in. And so what was your, where did you learn that?
Well, I'm not sure if my... my peers would agree
keeping,
with you on
I'm
that.
Keeping quiet. I'm keeping quiet.
I don't know. Actually, I was supposed to be a trumpet player. I wanted to play trumpet, but they had too many trumpet players when the fifth grade started recruiting kids. And my parents said, well, you're always banging on stuff. You should play drums.
No.
So I started playing drums and taking drum lessons. And to this day, I probably should have stayed on trumpet.
Well, no, God bless your parents.
I wouldn't have to carry all that stuff around with me.
Yeah, but most parents would say, no, I can't live with that noise.
Well, you have a drum set.
You know what you guys should do? You should do a section of an Ides of March show where you all play the instrument you started out on.
We did that. We
really?
We did it in our Christmas show about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I played clarinet, Jim played saxophone, you were on percussion.
Yeah.
I can't remember what Larry played, but we did that. We did a little skit with Dave Stahlberg, our trombone player, being the band director. And we played some sheet music. It was pretty funny.
Yeah,
it was pretty
typically
funny.
The percussion section were screw-ups. So we were throwing stuff at the horn players and messing around and smashing the cymbals and stuff. Yeah, it was...
But honesty, Mike is not just a great drummer. He's a real musician. And vocally, we blend together so well.
He's got cash money, by the way. He's checking.
Yeah. But no, I mean, there's more to be. He's way more than just a drummer. Mm-hmm. He's a musician. And I know from rehearsing with him and playing with him for all these years, he's really got a musical ear. And we pride ourselves on working together as a rhythm section.
I want to hold you on this for a second. You guys, the Ides of March, do something that I think is pretty rare. 60 years in the business, you know the songs, yet you're constantly rehearsing. Mm-hmm. You're always making sure that it's the way it's supposed to be. And when you go to an Ides of March concert, you're not going to see a Las Vegas show. You're going to hear the records played live the way they sound on your turntable,
not
on
speeded
your
up.
CD, on the whatever. Right. Who was the driving force for that? Because that's a rarity in groups that have been around for not even half as long as you guys have.
I guess that was one of our principles when we just started, because we sang together and we played together, and we said whatever we do, we want it to sound the way it should sound on the record. And we didn't want to add extra things onto the records we recorded because we couldn't reproduce them live.
Uh-huh.
And we felt like we honored the records that we played that we heard in the 60s. And when we'd go to shows and hear them differently, it was like, well, wait, we're missing that part. We'd be singing the harmony or that little kick or that little riff that was in there that was so important to us when we heard it. And we would try to do that. When we, years later, formed the Cornerstones of Rock show, it was such an honor for us to play the songs of the Cry and Shames and the New Colony Six and Jimmy Sons and the Shadows, to play them as close to the original record as possible and not do our own versions of it. Like, you've heard so many
cover bands.
Cover bands do their own thing.
It's like bad karaoke sometimes.
Right. Yeah. And so we just wanted to honor the song to give people the memories from way back when. And they come up to us after the show and say, boy, those sounds just like the record.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the biggest compliment you can get when people come up to you and say, God, that really sounded like the record. Mm-hmm. It is the biggest compliment you can get. But we've always taken our job very seriously as a job and not just a party. We never got in trouble on the road. We were too busy being serious as musicians. Yeah. And we enjoy rehearsing, too. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I guess to a lot of people, it might be like, you enjoy bowling and getting together with the guys once a week. That's what we get to do and have fun.
We're better musicians than bowlers. That's what.
Yeah, that's part of it too.
I have to say that, and we got a break for a second. But if you follow some of the Ides on Facebook, one Ide in particular, Scott May. If you follow him on Facebook, he will take these crazy, wonderful pictures every time you guys are rehearsing, and it's just like his nose or something that is sticking into the camera. And in the background, you'll see Jim and his guitar or something. It's the wildest. You should do like a whole album that would include just some of Scott's
behind
strange, wonderful pictures.
Well, and again, we have two of the guys here from the Ides of March, original members of the Ides of March. Listeners are saying, oh, my gosh, I hope the other guys are okay. Yeah, that's the whole idea. They're staying home because we want them to be okay.
They better be.
For the big Christmas show Sunday the 8th at 3 o'clock at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles. We'll come back with Mike and Bob after this on WGN.
We got reindeer on the rooftop, if you want, with their hooves going clip clop, if you need. We got angels in my backyard, if you got. Colored lights blinking off and on, off and on. Only old Scrooge could resist it, but all this could go, Santa, give me rock and roll for Christmas.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Ides of March, Rock and Roll for Christmas, and that's what you're going to get at the Ides of March Christmas show. It will be December 8th, 3 p.m. at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles.
Right.
Tickets go to oshows.com. There or be square. And it is a wonderful concert. It is really two concerts in one. The first half is Christmas. The second half is the Ides of March with a lot of their hits, and Toby Hitchcock will be joining the band.
Yeah.
And what else am I not saying?
That pretty much sums it up. Go to oshows.com and tickets are available. They're not terribly expensive. You're going to have a great time. You can get out of there, have dinner in St. Charles. You don't have to go far, and then travel.
Come on over to your house.
We've already
for
heard the weather's great, too. It's going to be, I think, 60, 62 degrees that
yeah,
day.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You have such a rich fantasy life.
Again, be sure that you go to O'Shows to get your tickets so that you're getting
O'Shows.com.
The legitimate price on the tickets. Okay, before we run out of time with you guys, we got Mike Borsch and we have Bob, of course, Bob in studio. And I hesitate to ask this question, but I've always wanted to know, since you guys have been together for 60 years, who's the messiest of your group?
Wow.
who's the guy that you go, it's
Phil. Well, having lived on the road with all the guys, I'd have to say it's Jim.
Oh.
Why does that not surprise me?
He's always so focused on the music. I mean, he's always writing, he's always making, he's always thinking.
Yeah, that's amazing too.
And so things just sort of get cluttered.
Yeah. So it's the creative mindset.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, now here's one of those inside the group questions. Who snores the loudest?
We never had snoring issues that I can recall.
When we were young, staying in the same room, all four of us.
Yeah, I don't remember any problems.
You were just exhausted.
It was the competition for the shower and the towels. That was the biggest. Who gets in first and gets a dry towel?
Okay.
I'm reminded of that scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles when John Candy uses up all the towels and there's water all over, and Steve Martin gets on and he's trying to dry himself off with a washcloth. Yeah. That was like being on the road with the Ides of March.
Can I tell the Florida story?
Sure. Go right ahead.
So talk about Jimmy being focused on his writing. So we were playing... You Wouldn't Listen was out, and we played in West Palm Beach. Actually, we played in Ocala, Florida, somewhere. We did one show, and then we had to jump in the van with our equipment and run down to West Palm Beach to play in a club after that, the same night. So we were all sweated up for playing the first show with our green wide whale corduroy suits on in Florida in the summer.
Now, I think you have to say the year.
66.
Okay.
Got to put in a time frame.
Right. So we jump in this van. We're all sweaty. We're lying down. We're tired. And we drive down an hour or so to West Palm Beach. And we walk into this club. And there's this band on stage. And they're singing their hearts out. They're just playing the blues. And they're singing I've Been Trying. And the harmony was awesome. And we look at a band called the Almond Joys. And it was the precursors of the Allman Brothers.
Oh,
it was
my.
Greg and Dwayne. And they were just hammering it out. And we're going, oh, my God, we have to follow these guys. So we're at the hotel, finally. We get a nice hotel on the beach, and which for us was like, wow, we're in Florida. Mm-hmm. This is the beach. This is great. And we're out having fun on the sun, and Jimmy's out with his tablet writing his course, as he always does. So I had this idea. We'll go in the room, and we'll trash the room. I mean, not really, not break anything, but just... turn things over and put towels all over and wreck the place. That we were like laying on the ground up with feet up in the air and just like somebody had come in and done havoc. And Jimmy walks in the door, looks around, grabs his sunglasses, and walks right back out, doesn't say a word. He was focused totally on his writing.
Yeah.
He didn't see a thing.
Oh, my gosh.
And walked right back out, ruining our whole thing.
Oh, that worked, yeah.
Okay, so we had to put everything back.
So then scroll forward to 1970, and now the Allman Brothers are a big album-oriented rock band, and we've got a hit record. We had number one record in the country, and we started playing dates with them. So the first time we thought, well, they remember us as kids, because they were about 4 years older than we were.
Yeah.
Big difference, 16 versus 20. Mm-hmm. 20. Way more advanced than we were, and we were scared to death having to go on stage after them. And sure as heck, they remembered us, and we remembered them. Really great guys. Really
That's
great guys.
Great.
Terrific musicians.
We ended up playing three or four shows with them over the years in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the band.
Well, I think I know the answer to my last question, and that is, who had the most suitcases? And that would have to be Jim.
Oh, God, of course.
And now who has the most hair products? That's Jim. And who has a hair dryer? That's Jim.
Yeah, still does.
And what is his guitar count up to now?
230.
Oh, really?
It's over 200, I know that.
Wow. Because we were last at the house, and he was under 200.
I think when we were last at the house, it was 170.
Yeah. Oh, gee. Yeah.
Well, I think he was on a guitar diet for a while. But he's
You know, his old, his expression, guitars that followed me home.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Steve says, I have gas, guitar acquisition syndrome.
And as I tell Johnny, every guitar teaches me a new song.
After 40 years, I bought into it. Yeah. I go, you're right.
Well, they have gone up in value, too. That's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, a good investment. Well, it's just, you know what? This is fun talking to you guys because we get to find out stuff that... After all the times that we've interviewed the Ides and Jim, I learned things tonight about you guys.
A modest amount of dirt. Okay.
That's good. See, that's good. And the fact that you guys have been together for 60 years just blows my mind. I mean,
you know,
that's
it
so
freaks
cool.
us out. When we think about it,
sure.
we realize how fortunate we are. We're very blessed. And so glad we can still do it at a high level. And people come out and see us. That's the important thing. Otherwise, we'd still be sitting in Larry's basement practicing, you know.
Well, we're only going to let you go if you promise you guys are going to come back.
Promise.
We will make it.
Okay.
Glad you were so honored to be
back.
Here. Really.
And now that you know how to get in this building, we're good.
We know the code.
Right. Yes.
The passwords.
Yes.
And again, go to oshows.com, and it's going to be December 8th, 3 p.m., Ides of March Christmas show at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles, and it's going to be a wonderful show.
And let me tell you from our own experience, it will get you in the holiday mood.
Oh, yeah.
It really will.
It really does.
And if you haven't been to the theater in a while, you'll be very impressed with it. The acoustics are great. It's comfortable, and hats off to Ron.
And after the show, you all go out and sign autographs, and there's you can get CDs and pictures and all kinds of stuff.
Yep. Our families are there, too, enjoying getting to Christmas spirit.
Oh, that's great. Well, Bob, thank you so much. And Mike, thank you for joining us
tonight.
Thank you so much for having us.
Our pleasure.
It's been so long since we've seen these guys.
Great to see you again.
So
you
when they're healthy.
Changed a bit.
Thank you. Hug the other guys for us when you see them.
Well, only when they're healthy.
That's right.
Okay. More coming up. Stay with us at WGN Radio.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it, bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago, Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday couldn't shut down.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to give you a glimpse of a part of Chicago you might have thought about, but you might not be that familiar with.
Right.
There's a very cool new book out called Looking Back, Looking Forward, How Chicago Helped Shape and Build Careers Over the decades.
And the author of that book is one of the most prolific writers around, not just in Chicago, but anywhere. He's our buddy Neil Samors. How are you tonight, Neil?
Good morning, Johnny.
Hi
good
there.
Good evening. Good evening.
Well, good grief.
Good grief, yes.
Is this number 34 for you? 35. Holy smokes. As I said, you are easily the most prolific writer, and is it safe to say that the majority of these 35 books have had something to do with Chicago, very Chicago-centric in some way, shape, or form?
Every one of them.
Every one. Everything from the hot dog to Michigan Avenue to the Chicago River to Clark Weber. Right?
In fact, Neil, Johnny and I were talking about that tonight, and we were wondering, out of the 35 books you've written, which has been your most successful book?
Well, we did a book years ago called The Old Chicago Neighborhood, and it really covered Chicago in the 30s and 40s, and that probably was. And then after that, when I did the book Chicago in the 60s, did very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's how we met you, too, was Chicago in the 60s.
Yeah.
Right. And then the last time we actually had you in studio was with the one and only Clark Weber, because you worked with him on his book.
Yeah, Clark Weber's Rock and Roll Radio.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of radio, can I just say thanks to Christopher Lynch, who does the essay in the opening of your book, and his essay is on, quote, weirdo radio, which is basically WGN radio, and we are mentioned in that essay, and he spelled my name right, so thank you, Christopher, for that, and thank you for including the essay. It's a wonderful essay.
I appreciate that, too.
And tell him the check's in the mail.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Tell us about the inspiration for this book, Looking Back, Looking Forward, How Chicago Has Helped Shape and Build Careers Over the Decades. Now, these are essays of people who really made it in Chicago, right?
And they're not essays. They were interviews. They're interviews I did all these people and over the years. And the great thing about it is the combination of people who were born here and people who came here and shaped their careers in Chicago and had Chicago influence their careers early days and later days.
Mm-hmm. It seemed so appropriate that you would have Tom Dreesen write your introduction, the foreword to the book, because, of course, you think of comedy, at least I do. I think about Tom Dreesen, who made it here and became, I mean, speaking of Sinatra, became the very best friends, opening act for Sinatra over the years, but it all started right here in Chicago, right?
And key thing about Tom Dreesen, as well being a great comedian, was that he was partnered with Tim Reed, and they're the first and only and last black and white comedy team.
Yep.
And I remember interviewing them back in the, this would have been the early 80s. And their chemistry was just wonderful.
Exactly.
And I learned in the foreword of the book that they were, I did not know this about them, that they were known to be an anti-drug act. They just didn't do drugs. And Tom Dreesen never did drugs. If he hung out with Hugh Hefner, when the drugs came out, he went home.
And he pointed that out very clearly in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the years, you've had the good fortune of interviewing these people. So what was the inspiration to focus on their careers and write this book?
Well, it's the fact that there were so many interesting stories here, that beginning and starting with Hugh Downs and Mike Wallace, and going through people in radio and television and entertainment and sports and politics, that I was able to cover a lot of different people and a lot of different and great stories.
Mm-hmm.
And Hugh Downs is such a fascinating man. Tell us a little bit about your interview time with him.
Well, I'll tell you, the great thing about it, when I was first growing up in Chicago, I lived on 1626 West Farwell between Ashland and Clark Street. And I had heard over the years that Hugh actually lived in the same block as me. And so one day when I started doing the books, I called him up in Arizona, and he answered the phone, and he said, "Oh, Neil, I'd love to talk about that." And he told me, because he lived two buildings up from me.
Huh.
And he told me great stories about living on Farwell and taking the L and the bus downtown to NBC studios at Merchandise Mart. And then, but I got to tell you, the funniest story of all of Hugh Downs is that Hugh Downs was very creative, and he built a telescope one time, and he decided to go out in the alley behind his building in a empty lot and look up at the stars. Except for one problem: one of the neighbors thought he was a peeping Tom.
Oh. Hugh Downs.
And the policeman came and Hugh had to explain to him what he was doing. So it was a wonderfully funny story and very personal story.
Yes.
Hugh Downs responsible for one of the most unique moments in all of television, and I happened to be watching that night, when Hugh Downs was basically the sidekick to then Tonight Show host Jack Parr.
Jack Parr.
The night that Jack Parr was ticked off because the powers that be at NBC had nixed one of his jokes, and he walked off the show.
Oh, that's right, yes.
And when he walked off the show, Hugh Downs had to take over the rest of the show, and he did seamlessly. He did a wonderful job. But it was one of those moments that you thought, what is that? Oh, this is a joke. Parr is coming back. Parr didn't come back.
Mm-hmm. But Hugh was trained in Chicago, so that's why he did so well, right, Neil?
I got to give you one little sideline. Is that two blocks away from Hugh in Rogers Park lived Dave Garraway.
Oh, yes.
And Dave Garraway went to New York to go to do the Today Show, and then Hugh Downs came about a year or two later and was doing Jack Parr and then Concentration and then the whole career on television.
Wow.
You really, I think you'd agree with this. You really can't understate the role that Chicago Broadcasting played in the development of television in particular.
Absolutely. So with these people like Hugh Downs and Mike Wallace began with radio and went into television starting in Chicago, and then they went to New York and had huge careers.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the segment of your book on radio, television, and the media, I was really, really happy to see that you included Dick Biondi, that you'd had the good fortune of interviewing Dick and included him. Because anybody that would spend any time in Chicago, you can't mention his name if you were familiar with his work and not kind of wistfully talk about what a sweet human being he was.
Not only sweet, he was the most popular person and rock and roll person on radio and during his career. And he told me that people could walk down the street and they didn't have to have a radio on because everyone was listening to Dick Biondi. and people would say, "Turn off that Biondi program."
Yeah, and he loved that too.
He loved that. Yes, he did. He was a wonderful person.
And after Dick left Chicago, he went to a Mutual in New York, and then he went out to California for a while, and then, fortunate for us, came back to Chicago.
Yeah.
Was right. You know that he was on 23 different stations over his career?
Yeah.
Which he was actually proud about because he ended up back where he wanted to be, and that was right here in Chicago. And that is the cool thing about your book is that's the gist of it. These people cut their teeth here. Many of them left because I think Dreesen's the one that said, you know, if you make it in Chicago, the whole idea is you go on to other markets, but you do cut your teeth here. And there's so many of those stories where I'm reading them, these interviews, and I'm thinking, well, I never knew that. And we're going to talk about some more of those people. Neil's book is Looking Back, Looking Forward, How Chicago Has Helped Shape and Build Careers Over the Decades. And it's a really beautiful book just in time for Christmas. It's available. You can get it on Amazon. And Neil's last name is spelled Samors. And we'll come back with our guest after this on WGN.
This is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town. Chicago is.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Boy, that song is a great theme for the book we're talking about. The book is Looking Back, Looking Forward, How Chicago Helped Shape and Build Careers Over the Decades.
Right. Neil Samors is the author of the book. This is number 35 for him. And Neil, I was real happy to see that the way you broke down your book into categories, and we mentioned entertainment and sports and radio, television, and the media. There's politics, business. I really enjoyed the segment that you did on restaurants, the interviews that you did with the people. And you forget how many world-renowned people that we have, right, and have had here in Chicago, right?
Well, a great introduction to this book, this section, was written by Penny Pollock. He used to be the restaurant editor for Chicago Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote this great introduction because there have been so many, and there still are, so many great chefs and restaurateurs who have come out of Chicago.
Well, I'm thinking about an interview with Larry Levy, right?
Yes,
Rick Bayless, Grant Atchis. I mean, as I'm looking at the names, I'm going, oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, these guys all started in Chicago. Ann Roth, Chef Scott Harris, Gordon Sinclair. We're also a food community, right?
Absolutely. With great restaurants.
When you were working on organizing the book with the years of interviews that you had, did you set out to do it in categories, or what was your mindset when you were actually putting the book together?
Well, it did strike me that there are different categories I wanted to emphasize. And what was also great is asking, there are six different people who wrote introductions to the sections. Paul Meinke, formerly of ABC Channel 7, wrote the introduction to radio and TV. And David Marienthal, whose family owned Mr. Kelly's in London House, did entertainment, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I love the fact that in the section on politics and law, you have the introduction by Jan Schakowsky.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you why. Jan and I went to high school together.
Oh, is that right?
She went to Sullivan High School with me.
Yeah. And she's stayed in Chicago. I mean, she's still very active as U.S. Representative, Jan Schakowsky. But
now, you have interviewed so many people. Were there any of the people that you interviewed that you got a little nervous talking to them?
Well, not nervous, but they were challenging to try to get to interview them. But I tell you that take someone like former representative, the late representative Dan Rostenkowski.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And here he was, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee.
Mm-hmm.
He sat down with me in his home in his old neighborhood on the northwest side, and just, he didn't want me to leave. He just wanted to keep on talking about his father and about the Cubs and about being in there and then about politics. So these people were just absolutely wonderful to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
What was one of the most surprising things to you in any of your interviews, something that you really didn't expect to come out of the person you were talking to?
Well, let's take Hall of Famer, NFL Hall of Famer Gale Sayers.
Right.
First of all, to have the chance, he owned a business in Mount Prospect near me, and I went sat down with him one day, and he just talked about the fact that his career did not last that long, and here he was within 6-7 years in the NFL, elected the NFL Hall of Fame, and he said, you know, that really surprised me. I mean, I didn't expect that. I didn't, because my career was so short, but it's a wonderful thing. And here's someone being so modest about it and so easy to talk to. That was just great.
Mm-hmm. Was it difficult talking to Shelley Berman? Because he's in your entertainment segment.
No, Shelley Berman was very easy to. Shelley Berman, you didn't have to talk too long to because he would just keep on talking.
Yeah.
So I'll give you his greatest quote. He said to me, we're talking about, he grew up on the west side, talking about hot dogs. And since I had written, and I'd published a book, Never Put Ketchup on a Hot Dog.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shelley said to me, you know, Neil, anyone who doesn't, if who puts ketchup on a hot dog is anti-Semitic.
Oh!
And that was pure Shelley Berman.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I loved about Shelley Berman, and this is a moment I will never forget, saw Shelley years ago at Mr. Kelly's, and I was in a crowd with a bunch of high school people from a prom, and near the end of his act, Shelley looked around, and he just he went away from all the comedy stuff he'd been doing, and he said, I can tell there's a lot of people here that are on a prom date. And he said, I would like you to think seriously about this. Remember how proud you felt when you got dressed to go out to the prom and come down here tonight. He said, whatever happens for the rest of the evening, make sure you feel just as proud when you look at yourself in the mirror tomorrow morning. And he got a standing ovation.
Yeah, that gives me goosebumps. And in that same category of entertainment, our dear friend Ronnie Rice is included.
Yeah.
God bless you for Ronnie including Rice. Ronnie. Yes.
Ronnie Rice is the one who connected me with you at first.
Yes.
And Ronnie and I still talk, and he is a wonderful, wonderful man, as you know. Great musician, and he loved Chicago, and I was so happy to include his story in here and about his life and his background and where he came from, and he's just a wonderful guy.
But one of the fun things about Ronnie is you don't really have to interview him. You can just listen to the conversation he has with himself.
Well, that's interesting. Yes.
Yes, that's true. Well, we mentioned,
remember Ronnie was very close friends with Dick Biondi.
Dick Biondi,
yeah.
So,
in fact, Ronnie credits Dick Biondi with his success for the New Colony Six.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we mentioned that you have a chapter on restaurants and such. Can I go ahead and mention that coming up in the new year, you're going to be at Max and Benny's in Northbrook with a presentation of this book?
Yes, please. That's on January 20th.
Mm-hmm. 7 in the evening.
In the evening, 7 o'clock in the evening.
And that's Max and Benny's in Northbrook. So you get a good meal, and you also get to meet Neil and get your hands on the book. And for people who want to get the book for Christmas, are you recommending that they go to Amazon? Is that the best way to get it?
No, I recommend that. I did something different in this last couple of books. This is a print-on-demand book.
Mm-hmm.
So people can order it from Amazon.com, and they have a choice of softcover, hardcover, or an e-book.
Yeah, and the e-book, you're missing out on the pictures, and I just love the fact, I wanted to just tell you something geeky. I love the font in your book because it's so easy to read. Thank you. Thank you for the book. It's terrific. You've done it again, looking back, looking forward, how Chicago has helped shape and build careers over the decades. Job well done, Neil. Thank you so much for joining. Well, we appreciate you joining us, too.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Good to talk to you.
Steve.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
It really would be a great Christmas present, particularly if you have someone who is a displaced Chicagoan.
Or how about the person who's just struggling and whatever their thing is, they're in Chicago, you find out how many people started here and went on to great things.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just scratching the surface, but there are so many wonderful interviews in here. You'll go, really? I had no idea. So again, it's a terrific book. Stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putnam at WGN Radio. Saturday in the Park. Boy, that record was on the charts for such a long time.
And that's like Vehicle. That's a song when you hear the first few notes of it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what you're listening to.
Just that piano groove.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got so much stuff coming up tonight. Again, I will remind you, out of the midnight news,
mm-hmm.
we're going to do... the first and maybe only edition of a new little contest, and for lack of any other names, we're calling it, I See What You Did There.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to tell you what we're going to do. We're going to tell you when we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we want you to tell us what we did. Okay. And I don't want to embellish it because I'd give too much away.
Okay.
So, and the only clue I will give you. Mm-hmm. Is that longtime WGN radio listeners
mm-hmm.
may have a little better chance of figuring out
what we did there.
What it is that we did there.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to do that.
Or done. Did.
Yeah.
Do.
Done. Done. Did do that.
Da. Yeah. Yeah. Do da. Do da. Camptown. That was one of the last songs I played on accordion. Camptown Racers. Now I start shaking.
We are going to be talking with Tom Appel, publisher mm-hmm. of Consumer Guide, and lots of stuff to talk about with recalls and some of his recent road tests and a whole lot of other things.
And if you have questions for Tom, you can text us or call us, 312-981-7200. We already have a couple questions for Tom. We will cover recalls for sure, because sadly, it seems like every time Tom's on the show with us, we've got some pretty big recalls to talk about. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that the vehicles are being recalled for whatever reason. The only frustration I have is it takes forever for them to get around to taking care of these things once they know that there's a recall justified.
By the way, I should mention Chicago's winter overnight parking ban begins. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. And trust me, they don't play.
Mm-mm. I mean, lived in Chicago forever. Oh, I used to hate December 1st. I lived on Ridge for a while, and mm-hmm. Ridge up around Pratt,
right.
Between Devon and Pratt, very busy stretch of road. Mm-hmm. Wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning on December 1st and realize I'd have to go out and try to find a parking place on a side street, because that was one of the streets on the snow route. So if you live on a street that has the snow route posted, they mean business.
They will tell you.
Yeah. So, again, it starts, this is it. There's no snow on the ground, but be aware that the...
Doesn't matter.
The snow ban goes into effect at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I wonder how that's all going to be impacted by... One of the stories I caught this past week is that there's no money in the Chicago budget for city snow removal.
What?
Along the residential streets.
I've got to read that story, because
I mean the main streets are still going to be taken care of, but I think there was something about snow removal in neighborhoods that there wasn't the money in
the
budget for that.
We've been around long enough. We remember when snow was never removed on our side streets. It just wasn't a thing. You got out, you dug your car out, you put your...
You tried to dig your car out.
Yeah, and then you would put your folding chair there and call dibs on it, and then hope that your neighbors recognize that you're the one that did all that hard work. And I don't recall our side streets actually being plowed back in the day. Or alleys, for that matter, because when the garbage truck came through, and had to pick up the garbage, that's a tough job, too.
In fact, my dad worked at South Works, and one of the things he did, he was able to get this, it was like a chain thing, that like two chain strips that he was able to get made, so that if his car got stuck, and yes, there was the kitty litter in the trunk, but he would put the chains in front of the rear wheel, one of the chains in front of each of the rear wheels, so it gave them some traction.
Oh.
To kind of get the combination of the chains positioned in front of the rear wheels and the kitty litter in the trunk. That was what helped him.
And I bet if you goosed the engine, you could shoot those chains out from under you and like hurt the person that's standing behind you, ready to push your vehicle. Because they were rear-wheel drive vehicles.
But now you've got a lot of all-wheel drive vehicles.
Yeah, and of course, front-wheel drive vehicles.
And that's something we should talk a little bit. Tom Appel, if you're listening, one of the things we should talk about is reading your manual, understanding how all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive works in bad weather.
Yes. I think you know where I'm going to go with this on the subject of whether or not you have a front wheel or all wheel or rear wheel drive. Why is that so hard for me to say rear?
Because it's cold.
Rear. I'm a professional. Rear wheel drive. I think it takes me back to sixth grade and not being able to say the R-O-A-R word and being put in front of the classroom and made to say it over and over again. It's humiliated. So now when I see an R word, I'm like, I immediately freeze up. So rear wheel drive. Right. Anyway, remember our buddy, the bank president, who complained because he hated his new car. And we said, well, it's a gorgeous car. And he says,
he got a gorgeous Chrysler 300.
I can't drive it.
He hadn't taken it for a test drive. He didn't realize that his version was rear-wheel drive, and it was the middle of winter, and he was slipping and sliding all over the
place.
And
the back end of it was just bobbing back and forth. He goes, it's uncontrollable. And we said, well, it's rear-wheel drive. And he said, what? What?
But that was one of two instances we know of where somebody bought a car, didn't really pay attention to the specifics. The other was when we first started working at WGN Radio, Marty McNeely was a newsman. He did TV and radio news. We pulled up to the station one day, and he had this wonderful new Buick. I don't know if it was a LeSabre or Century or whatever. Anyhow, he had it, and about a week later, he had a different car. We said, Marty, what happened? He said, I didn't like the way it drove. And we said, well, did you test drive it before you bought? He said, no.
Yeah, but there was this.
Okay.
Remember, there was a standing joke that if his ashtray got dirty, he would take his car and
That's
trade
true.
It in. because we would say, whose car is that? And they go, well, that's Marty's car. Wait a minute. He was driving a fill in the blanks last week, and he just enjoyed vehicles. And mm-hmm. sure enough, he would just dirty the ashtray and trade it in, get a new one. Listener says the new concept of sidewalk plowing won't happen because there's been some talk about how the city was going to take care right. of that. And I feel that it's our responsibility if you own the property to clear your sidewalk. I really feel for the people who are delivering the mail and your FedEx oh, yeah. and your UPS and I look up and down our block and I'm thinking, and you expect them to wade yeah. across the, get out there and push a shovel.
And what is the thing, I think, didn't you discover something quite recently? It was the difference between the kind of rock salt that you get. There's a kind of rock salt that is more effective and also won't necessarily
ruin your grass. And it
stuff.
Also doesn't. What I just invested in was the kind of rock salt. Since post-pandemic, we have so many dogs on our street.
Yeah.
That was a pandemic thing. People got a dog. And suddenly our neighborhood became incredibly dog-friendly. So I specifically got the kind of salt that is not harmful to animals. And I guess it should not affect our grass and my garden. I hope not. Yeah, because it's not inexpensive. Another listener says, 1 year that was tried as a cost-cutting stunt, it didn't work. Numerous side street intersection collisions occurred due to inability to stop. You know what? I'm just not even looking forward to any snow on a Saturday night. Let it snow Monday yeah. through Friday. I want it to snow on Saturday night. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back here on WGN.
Kenyan bakehouse in my mouth. It's a heritage style. The Shaw artisan from the gluten-free aisle. I'll bake some cake in like an hour. Bob's Red Mill with that one-to-one flour. When I'm feeling like a king, Arthur is the name. You think it had wheat with the way it tastes the same. I'm spitting mad heat at Trader Joe's. Use a flame to cook the chicken tenders so good I proclaim me. Yo, too much Fusilli got me gaining weight. Too much Barilla, my belly inflate. All that Jovial, it accumulates. Oh, you gluten-free. You're so healthy.
It's Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Yeah, we're gluten-free. This is the world's first gluten-free radio show.
That's right. Completely gluten-free.
Yes.
Yes, no cheating on our part. When in doubt, do without is the mantra.
And we had so many people after last week's show, so many people saying, is Johnny going to do a little more holiday
yes.
gluten-free
Last week I was talking about cooking a holiday meal and how you can actually make dishes safe, gluten-free, for folks who have to be gluten-free so that they don't have to bring their own food to the holiday meal.
Refresh me. Did we talk last week at all about the gluten-free mincemeat or not?
No, we didn't. We talked about mincemeat. Yes.
This was a real surprise. So Johnny
yes.
is getting ready, and she's about to make the gluten-free mincemeat pies, mm-hmm. and?
Well, I posted the picture of the label on our Facebook page because I had two brands. I finally was able to find two, I call them designer brands because they're not the None Such. They're not the 24-ounce jars that you can get on Amazon for mm-hmm. $37 a jar.
Yeesh.
These were smaller jars. Mariano's had them, and I had one left over from last year that had an end date of 2025. So I said, oh, yay for me. 11-ounce jars. And I assumed because it just never crossed my mind that there would be wheat in one of the two jars that came from Great Britain. Mm-hmm. In fact, right there on the label, it says wheat. Now, thankfully, I had made my crust. I did not dump the mincemeat directly into the mm-hmm. crust because I would have had to throw the crust away. I put it in a bowl because I was going to decide, did I need to use two jars or 1.5 jars? Mm-hmm. And so when I poured it in the bowl and I looked at the label, I went, oh, no. So that one went in the garbage. And the other one, thankfully, I double-checked. And, in fact, from Great Britain, it says, safe for vegans and celiacs, and they spell it C-O-E.
Yeah, it looks like it's coliacs. But if you want to find that, and I'll make sure we do it on our blog, but also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show. Scroll down through a couple of the posts, and you will find what Johnny's talking about,
right,
with pictures of the You Don't Want It brand and the pictures of the It's Okay brand.
Yes. And I've decided, thanks to the recipes that were sent to me by listeners, I'm going to make it homemade next year because it's not all that difficult. And it just looks like it's going to be super, super yummy and the house is going to smell great. A couple of listeners said, do you have a candy recipe? I'd like to make a candy box for a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they do cookie boxes for friends and neighbors. What about candies? And there's one that I make and I've been making for some time called payday bars.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've all had a payday bar at some point in your life, and they're yummy. And I think that the recipe is not all that difficult. I'll be sure to have it posted for you later tonight so you can go ahead and give it a shot. I would recommend, though, that when you buy peanuts, because, of course, a payday bar is peanuts, nougat, and peanuts, that you check the jar of peanuts, because sometimes peanuts, so that they don't get stuck together, they have added wheat to them so that they, again, don't get stuck together. And I find myself saying, but why? I just want peanuts. But thankfully, you can get roasted peanuts in a jar that are safe, that are gluten-free. So you need 3 cups of peanuts, and you need a 9x13 pan. You spray your pan with Pam. Again, you don't want to use one with flour. You want one that's gluten-free. And then you sprinkle a layer of peanuts in there. And then it's as simple as 3 tablespoons of butter on the stovetop, 3 tablespoons of butter, and 2 cups of peanut butter chips. You get that nice and melted, and then you take a couple of cups of gluten-free miniature marshmallows. I find off-brands are not safe. You need to go with the name brand, the Stay Puffs, the name brand of marshmallows. Again, sometimes that white stuff is, in fact, a wheat product on the marshmallows, but you can easily find safe gluten-free marshmallows. So a couple of cups of miniature marshmallows and a can of sweetened condensed milk. When you mix all that up on the stove on a low heat and you get it all going real good, and then you pour it over the peanuts, and then you put another layer of peanuts, and you kind of press that top layer down, and then after it sits for a while, you can put it in the fridge to speed it up. It is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It is a payday.
If I may go off subject, because I did hear you mention payday bars.
Yes.
And I've only tried them once in my life because I found them to be very salty and they hurt my teeth on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you need to try Johnny's.
Yeah, I'm going to bring some in because the key here is you can get lightly salted peanuts too. You don't have to go over the top. I think that what's so yummy about it's the sweet salty combination.
Yeah, if it's done right, it's a wonderful combination.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, Gabe. Some of them can be too salty. The way Johnny makes it,
right,
it's just a nice mix.
And just be careful. Read your labels, because get a name brand of your miniature marshmallows, get a name brand of your roasted peanuts, and that combination. I know it just sounds like it's too simple. I know it sounds like a lot of sugar. It is. Nobody's saying you got to eat a half a pan.
Mm-hmm.
You cut this up and you could probably get 6 gift boxes of payday bars to share with neighbors or put with your cookie tray or whatever. They look good, and boy, are they yummy, I tell you. And they have,
boy, do I have a home for them right now.
I know. They've got a great shelf life, too. You can put them in a tin and put them in your refrigerator, and if you need just a little something sweet.
Yeah, that's one of the really good things about them. They last for a significant time.
And even if you put them in a tin in the refrigerator, the nuts will still be crisp. They will not get soft and mushy. So it's a little bit of butter and the peanut butter chips, not butterscotch chips, but peanut butter, the Reese's peanut butter chips. No chocolate involved in this. Mm-hmm. And then your sweetened condensed milk and your miniature marshmallows, and that makes your nougat that's inside the peanuts on the bottom and the top. And I'll be sure to post that.
And how long do you let it?
You don't cook anything, so you just let it settle and put it in the refrigerator, and that firms it up real nice. The combination of marshmallows and the sweetened condensed milk, and it gets all firmed up, and then you can cut it into squares. But I'm telling you, you better grease that pan, because it can be a nightmare trying to get those suckers out of the pan if you have not done that properly. Mm-hmm. And you just end up digging them out and eating them.
The way that you mentioned it, I thought this was going to be a baked good, but mm-hmm. I actually like the idea that it's not.
And, yeah.
And I have tried no-bake cake before. I mean, it's been a while, but mm-hmm. But yeah, I like the idea that you don't have to bake it because then you don't have to wait as long.
That's true. And it's got a long lifespan. Because I'm not kidding you. There have been Februaries when I'd open up the drawer and they'd go, hey, we have a tin of Payday bars mm-hmm. here. And you bite into them, you go, dang, they're still good.
Yeah.
A listener says something about sugar-free marshmallows. I don't know how that would work. And if they exist, I might have to seek them out. I don't know anything about those. Another listener says holidays are for gluttony for one or two goodies, not everything. Exactly. You don't have to eat half a pan. Mm-hmm. You can have just one or two and then share them. And that's the beauty of this particular recipe, is you get so many pieces that you can share.
We got so much stuff coming up. Tom Appel joins us. We're going to talk cars. Also, see what we did there? If you see what we did there, you could win some goodies by either calling us or mm-hmm. texting us at 312-591-7200. And we've got Tom Appel coming up, and we've got a whole bunch of things coming up. Oh, by the way, somebody was asking about our start time for next week. Next week, we will not be on at 9. We will be on after the Big Ten championship game, so around 10:45. That's mm-hmm. about when we'll be starting.
Did you say 591?
Did I say 591? Oh, that was a throwback to
The old days.
Wow.
591-7200.
Right. Yeah, that was a thank you, Julian. Good catch.
So 981-7200, area code 312.
Or try both of them and see what works.
No, don't.
I love to feel the rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips, in the moonlight shadows. We take that first step, ask her out and treat her like a lady. Second step, tell her she's the one you're dreaming of. Third step, take her in your arms and never let. No, step by step, step by step, you win the love.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. By the way, for those of you who are wondering, yes, we will have the gluten-free recipe that Johnny talked about. That will be on our blog, mm-hmm. and we will be posting links. You can always go to our blog, which is, oddly enough, steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, and subscribe to our blog. And there is no cost for the subscription.
No. And we don't spam you. We only let you know when there has been something new posted. Simple as that. Okay, something just happened. You just heard a couple of tunes there. I understood everything you just said.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And, do we have a... do we have a correct, Julian?
We do indeed.
You're kidding.
Okay.
All right.
Let's say good morning to Bob in Hammond.
Okay, let me dig up Bob in Hammond. And the question was, see what we did there. Bob, what did we do?
Well, normally with Wally Phillips in the first time of the month, the first things you're supposed to say is rabbit.
Yep.
And you just heard
rabbit and rabbit and rabbit.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
You got it. You are so right. And Steve gave a clue earlier today when he said those people who've listened to the station for some time. Yes, it started with Wally Phillips. And then when I was working with Wally in the morning, I loved that tradition because people would hurt themselves to get to the phone to be the first to rabbit him.
And since we're never on the air, rarely on the air, on the first of a new month, but it is now officially December 1st. Yes. So you just heard rabbit. Well, good for you.
Yes.
Thank you.
And you're going to get some goodies from the WGN Radio Prize List.
Yes, we have a couple of CDs. We're going to send you one of our CDs.
That's fantastic.
We're going to send you a Bob Young CD, which is no longer in circulation. But if you listen to this radio station, you know he did our theme songs. We'll send you one of his CDs. And we're going to send you, since you are obviously a good WGN listener, you're going to get your very own official WGN T-shirt. All of that coming your way. Well, thank you.
So you are the inaugural winner for something that may or may not ever happen again. See what I did there.
Yes. See what Steve did there.
So hold on. We'll get some information from you off the air. And Tom Appel was sitting quietly in the wings. Tom, did you know what we were doing there?
No, I knew it was Eddie Rabbit. I have that album.
And I know I know you have seen Rabbit on our pages every month.
Times.
Yes. So there you have it.
So that was our musical Rabbit.
Yes.
And Eddie Rabbit, to this day, I still miss him. Was fortunate enough to have Eddie on the show several times. And what a really, really nice guy. What a great performer. And what a loss, much too early in his career.
Yes. And Tom owned the CD, right?
LP.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, welcome. Tom joins us a couple times a month. Tom is a publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Tom is a very busy guy. Now he's all over Blue Sky. You've embraced Blue Sky, Tom.
Yes. And that's Car Guy Tom at Blue Sky.
Yeah. I responded to peer pressure.
Good.
Or Steve pressure, one or the other.
Yeah, Steve pressure, yes.
Well, let us start with, can I start with the listener's post?
This is a real interesting post that we had from a listener who had a question for you, Tom.
Sharon Holman from Glen Ellen said, a question for Tom. How has the 2023 Porsche Cayenne Coupe tested out? I splurged last year, and gosh, I'm loving it. My concern is maintenance cost. $768 for the annual oil change tire rotation.
That's a chunk of change.
$768. Thank you for any insights that you might have, Tom.
Yeah, so the Cayenne Coupe is just a fastback version of the Cayenne, which is Porsche's midsize crossover, very popular for a Porsche. And maintenance on all Porsches is relatively expensive. You do not need to take your Porsche to a Porsche dealer to get it serviced, and you can save some money by finding a good Porsche European specialist mechanic, and there are lots of them in Chicago, that will probably do that work for close to half. So find a dealer, find a repair shop, check their record, check their Yelp reviews, and just find out how satisfied consumers are. But there are a lot of those in the area.
Why is maintenance that expensive? Is it the design? Is it the parts availability?
The time that it takes?
There's a bunch of things. The oil change costs more because they use more oil, and it's always a special blend of synthetic. You usually have to get a bunch of little things done that you might not have to for another vehicle. And you went to a Porsche dealer, and their labor rates are very high.
Well, that's a good tip, because I choked when I saw that she's talking about over $700 for it. And you wonder if when you decide that you're going to pop for that vehicle, if they say, oh, and by the way, you need to know, or is there the assumption if you can afford a Porsche, you're not going to worry about an oil change?
No, I never recommend a service contract, and I don't know where Porsche is at the moment with free service, because they offer it and then they don't. So does BMW and Mercedes. Mm-hmm. But there's usually 2 years free maintenance available for some vehicles too, which would cover an entire lease for a lot of people.
Okay.
So you can ask those questions when you buy the vehicle. You should ask those questions.
That's one of the things that Hyundai Corporation has been doing quite well with their extended warranty, which is one of the best warranty extensions for a new car in the business.
Yeah, funny thing about Hyundai and warranties, too, I think most of us remember that when Hyundai launched at the end of the 80s, they had a terrible, terrible reputation for reliability.
Yeah.
And those cars were, frankly, junky. And one of the things they did to help recover from that was to start to offer these very good warranties. And they've never stopped offering them. So now that they've got their quality right where the industry is, maybe even better than average, they're still offering these great warranties, which is a really nice perk.
Am I wrong, or was one of the first big deal extended warranty promotions back with Chrysler when they said there, what was it, 7 years, 70,000 miles or something like that?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember at what point they were going bankrupt that they started doing that. Since Chrysler had a habit of going bankrupt every few years in those days.
Yeah, they did. but I want to say that was, in the 70s or 80s that they started doing
that? It might be really early 80s, because I associated with the launch of the Dodge Aries and the Plymouth Reliant, the K cars,
and that
was 81.
Yeah.
And, well, was that a Lee Iacocca thing?
It was.
Yeah, a fascinating man, and if you ever have the chance, read Lee Iacocca's books.
The book is
really
good
books.
Yeah,
I never did that. Yeah, I need to do that.
Tom Appel is our guest. Tom, sit tight or hang loose, as Steve likes to say. We've got a bunch of vehicle information coming up. Also, questions from our listeners, and you can shoot us a question at 312-981-7200 right here on WGN.
Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that. That's one of Tom's tunes, and this week's Tom's Tunes theme is what, Tom?
Flying Home Four Ways, and that was Flying Home as performed by its author, arts composer Lionel Hampton with Benny Goodman back. It was composed back in 1939, but that was Lionel Hampton and his all-star band at Newport in 1978.
And just kind of a parenthetical thing, just about any Newport jazz festival recording is wonderful. Some of the best jazz you will ever hear at some of the Newport festivals. And fortunately, not all of them, but I would say most of them have been recorded and released in various forms. But that's one of those categories that if you are looking for a really good live performance album, it's difficult to go wrong with one of the live Newport jazz albums. Really, really good stuff. And that's one of Tom's cartoons. And so which sound system did that sound best on for you, Tom?
Wow, that's a good question. What was I just in? I was just in a Volvo with not the Bang & Olufsen, but the other Swedish system, and I can't think of it offhand. But Volvo's been doing a killer job with audio lately. Even their bass systems are good, but as you move up in trim levels, you go through Bang & Olufsen and then an even higher system. But they're incredibly good, and very difficult to manipulate, but that's okay because they're really good just the way they are in the factory settings.
By the way, we had several people that are responding to the question about the extended warranties, and from an 872 area code, and I didn't remember this, but they said Chrysler Corporation pioneered the 5-year 50,000-mile warranty in 1963.
That I do not remember. That's very generous for 63.
Yeah.
Yeah, because really nobody was pushing. It was, I don't even remember. When did the 3-year 36,000-mile warranty thing become standard? Because it, for a long time, car companies really didn't push that warranty thing.
No, I bought my first new car was a 1991 Ford Ranger, and that had a 12-month warranty.
Oh.
Yeah,
and that was fairly standard in 91. I think that's around the time we started moving to 336.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a listener from 608 area code says, Tom, any news on the Toyota motor replacements?
Some news. Toyota is starting to work with dealers to help them figure out how to schedule these repairs because they will take up an incredible amount of service-based space. And it looks like dealers are going to be working on one vehicle at a time. So you're going to need to get onto a list and get scheduled soon. They're not, I don't think they're starting to schedule yet, but Toyota's working with the dealers, so we're getting close. And they're also trying to decide whether or not they need to add help during this period of time.
Sure, because think about it. If it was a successful dealership, they could end up having all their bays filled with replacements.
And if it's one vehicle at a time, and we're talking how many vehicles?
100,000.
So do the math.
Yeah.
So we're going to be into the next decade before all these things are fixed.
There's about 1,000 Toyota dealers. So each one will do 100. It's going to take a year.
Sure.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, it's going to take a year to get through these. So you're going to want to get on that list early if you can.
And how many days are they saying the replacement procedure will take?
Last I heard, and this number hasn't been refuted by anyone, 25 hours per vehicle, so 2 days. Maybe three.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Well, before we get to some of the vehicles that you've been driving, recalls, I'm looking at, was it Hyundai that had a pretty big recall over the past week?
I saw that Hyundai had a recall of 42,000 vehicles for an interesting problem. This sounds old school, but the transmission can shift out of park without someone's foot being on the brake.
Ah.
Yeah, that's old school. So 35,000 Tucson's, 7,000 Santa Cruz's, and that's the fun little pickup that is based on the Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
These are all 2025 models, and notices are going out on January 19th.
Boy, that Hyundai recall is a lot more serious than the one I saw, the Santa Fe recall for a sunshade issue.
I didn't see that one.
No. Okay.
What's that?
The sunshade falls down, so they need to tighten it up. I mean, that's nothing.
Tighten it up.
Gosh. Also, I'm looking at, let's see, some other recalls. What do you want to add to the recall list? Because I think Rivian had something like 5,000 vehicles, 25s, R1Ts, and R1Ss. Have you driven the Rivian?
I never have. I've sat in the vehicle, and I've been trying to get on their schedule, but no luck as yet. I've got someone from Rivian coming up on the podcast soon, so I'm sure I can swing a loan at that time.
By the way, blatant plug, podcast and website and stuff like that. If people want to hear your podcast, where do they do that?
Yeah, the podcast is anywhere. It's the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. You can download that wherever you get podcasts. It's great if you subscribe. And if you do subscribe, please leave us a review, especially on Apple Podcasts. Otherwise, check us out at consumerguide.com. Our 2025 Best Buy list, the new list goes live Tuesday or Wednesday of this coming week.
Okay. And before we jump on to some other things, let's jump to the phones for a second. And we go to, let's see, this is
Jay.
Jay, you have a question for Tom?
Yeah, hi guys, good evening. I wanted to ask Tom, I'm recently retired and my wife and I are doing a lot of driving trips across the U.S. with our pooch.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard much about it, but I was looking into a 21 or 22 Genesis GV80.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to know how comfy it was for long driving trips, and you know how dependable it is, and what your thoughts were on it.
Okay, let me jump in on this for a second. Johnny and I have a 2023 GV80, and one of the many reasons we bought it, the seats are incredibly comfortable.
Yes, yes,
really, really comfortable. One of the pieces of advice I would give is read your manual. Most of the complaints we see from GV80 owners are from people who haven't read the manual, because this is a tech-loaded car.
If you don't like technology, you don't want the vehicle.
It does tons of things. It does them well.
A lot of safety features.
But so many people just are not taking the time to read the manual. Tom, you want to jump in? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you guys entirely. And it's a really great steady-state highway cruiser. Very quiet, very stable, very nice on the highway. I mean, the only ding on that car that I can think of is that fuel economy is not excellent with the V6, the turbo V6, instead of the turbo 4. But, man, what a nice car.
Let me just say...
You guys recommend the V6 rather than the 4, because the 6, they said, had better pickup and... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a turbocharged 6, and
we drove from Indiana to Chicago, and we averaged 25 miles to the gallon by maintaining a speed, letting people go by us, you know, at 80 on the Dan Ryan.
But also, I was kind of keeping up with traffic. I will pat myself on the back and say that I have found my foot to be more efficient than most cruise control systems.
Huh.
Yeah. You'll love it if you're going to be traveling, doing any amount of traveling, because with my back, I was so particular about vehicles. And I got to tell you, we spent a lot of time in Lincolns, and I just said, I can't do it. I cannot sit in this car for any period of time.
We were this close to buying a Lincoln Aviator with the 30-way adjustable seats, and the seats may adjust 30 ways, but none of those ways worked for us.
None of them were comfortable. Huh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck to you.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Appreciate it. Happy travels. We're going to take a break. Come back with Tom Appel. More car talk here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That is one of Tom's car tunes. Tom, you want to say who that is and what that is?
I believe that was Peanuts Holland with Buck Clayton and Charlie Singleton off of Jazz in Paris from 1954.
And that's Flying Home. Flying Home is such a fun song to play.
Yeah.
Are you saying play as a musician?
Yeah.
Or popping the CD.
Well, particularly if you're a guitar player, just the fingering and everything. It's just a fun thing to jam with.
Oh, Tom and I, didn't we say that too? We said it's such a fun thing to play.
Well, I mean play it off my phone.
Yes.
Having no actual musical skill.
By the way, Tom, before we move on, I want to bring in Julian. Julian, you talked with a caller who didn't want to go on the air, and she had an interesting question.
Yeah. Shout out to Christina. Thank you, because it's a very interesting question. Went on the Toyota website, and you can see all of their 2025 vehicles available. However, there's only the 2024 Prius. They don't have any 2025.
Yeah, sometimes they delay a rollout. We used to always have new cars show up in September. That was what was normal way back when. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that during the middle year, without announcement, the manufacturer will just start selling the next model year for no reason that we'll ever understand. But there's a lot of reasons having to do with compliance with EPA standards and suppliers and things like that. The Prius has not been discontinued, so there's probably just too many 2024s on the ground, and they will roll that out later.
Unlike, it was at the Element. I sent you an email earlier this week, and one of our own here at WGN Radio said her mother is obsessed with the Element, and she can't wait to get a new one. When will they be available? And you said they won't be, right?
No, I can't see anything in Honda's future that looks anything like an Element. Now, this doesn't mean that Honda might not use that name again, but it won't be a vehicle very similar to the Element. And if people don't remember the Element, it was the coolest car because it was slightly long wheelbase, but it was a compact crossover with all sorts of interior space and kind of wacky second row seats that you could fold out of the place and a big rubber floor in back, so you could get a lot of stuff in there. Fuel economy was pretty good. You could get it with all-wheel drive, really big sunroof in the back. It was a fun vehicle. And one of the funny things that happened with this, and this happened with the Scion XB as well, these were targeted at young buyers. Mm-hmm. But like empty nest seniors and people who had a certain amount of mobility issue, like related to their hips, started buying these things. So they wanted the audience to be cool young hipsters, but that's not who bought these cars. And that doesn't always work well when you're trying to retail these to youngsters.
Was that?
I remember the first time we test drove an Element. I wasn't knocked out by the looks of it. We got in and I thought, well, this is pretty cool. And then the more we drove it, I thought, this is really cool.
Is that the vehicle that was demonstrated where you could hose the floors down? Because they, so if you've got dogs, put your dogs in here when you're going to the dog park. And then if they pee, you just hose it down. I said, okay.
Honda was very tentative about the hosing it out thing. Like, they demonstrated that, and then they were worried about people going crazy with a hose in the back of the car. So they issued a press release like, maybe you shouldn't hose out your car. But yeah, they had a big rubber floor mat, and it would drain out. So that was very convenient.
Oh, that's good.
Before we jump to some other things, we were talking a little while ago about winter driving and rear-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive. What do people need to know, that the basics of, we haven't had any really nasty snow here. We had a little snow a couple weeks ago, but before we get hit with the big one, what do people need to know? And other than their manual, where should they look?
Well, they should know what they have. As we shared the story of our bank president who did not know that his Chrysler was a rear-wheel drive vehicle. And he got us in the lobby of the bank and said, I hate that vehicle. And he's pointing out to the parking lot. He says, you can't drive it. The back end of it just keeps coming around to meet the front end.
And also, some four-wheel drive vehicles are rear-wheel drive based. So you want to explain that a little bit too?
Yeah, and people should know the difference. But most front-wheel, most crossovers that you buy these days with all-wheel drive have a torque bias towards the front wheels, which means that what you're going to experience more or less is something called understeer. So if you take off from a light and you lose traction, you're turning, and the car sort of starts to creep forward, that's understeer. And that means that the front wheels have lost traction. So what you want to do is slow down and try to continue the arc you're on, or maybe loosen it up, open it up a little bit until you regain traction. And if you're going slow enough, this won't be a problem. Now, if you're looking at a crossover like a BMW X5, Mercedes-Benz ML, these are rear-wheel based, and rear-drive based. And that's what the bias is when you're driving. Until you need torque up front, power will not be transferred to the front wheels. So what you want to be aware of is the back end sort of trying to get away from you. If it does that, you want to back off the gas a little bit. And again, if you can straighten your corner a little bit, that'll help you recover traction faster.
And also, take the time to read your manual. I know a lot of people won't, but read your manual and understand the different
modes
you can put the engine in the transmission. It all makes a difference.
And even if you're driving a Mercedes or a BMW rear-wheel drive, fill the trunk with kitty litter. Right? That's what we did.
I would not do that with most front-drive vehicles.
I know.
I do with front-drive crossovers. But yes, we usually had like fertilizer in the back of our car.
Big bags. That's icky.
Well, My Boy Scout troop sold fertilizer, and I did a bad job, so my dad bought the rest of it, and it just sat in our garage for like 20 years.
Oh, my gosh. That's a great story, though. They sold fertilizer. So for all of you people who had to help your Girl Scouts sell cookies, be thankful. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah, those were tough days.
Oh, my gosh.
What's new on Consumer Guide? What have you been test driving lately?
I drove two Mazdas almost back to back, one that I really liked and one that I really didn't. But I drove the Mazda CX-50, and that is Mazda's subcompact crossover that is sold alongside the CX-5. They're both about the same size, about the same price. The CX-50 is a little bit more expensive, but the CX-50 looks a little bit more modern, looks a little bit longer, looks a little bit more like a crossover. For 2025, Mazda has added a hybrid version of that vehicle, something they desperately need in their lineup, but they cheated to get it. Mazda builds the CX-50 in the same plant that Toyota builds the Corolla Cross, and they borrowed a hybrid engine from Toyota and installed them at that plant. So you're getting this excellent Toyota hybrid engine and an excellent Mazda chassis, and the combination is really good. It's a nice vehicle. It's relatively affordable. I saw a combined 38 mpg, which I thought was pretty nice. A very interesting car, and I think this is going to sell well for them.
38 is that what you said? 38?
I saw 38 mpg, yeah.
Wow.
During some pretty nice local weather, just before the cold snap.
Huh, that's excellent.
Well, we mentioned Genesis a little earlier, and I see on your daily drive you have some thoughts about the 2026 Genesis GV70 and electrified GV70. What can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so this is Genesis' entry-level crossover. It's not a subcompact. It's a compact crossover. Very stylish, and it's sold well, very well received by the public. For 2026, which is going to come early next year, as we were just discussing, I think that vehicle is going to go on sale in the spring as a 2026. But this is an update of that vehicle. The big changes are exterior updates to the grille and to the taillights and some interior style updates. But as we've seen happening with a lot of vehicles, Genesis is going to go with a single LED piece for the digital instrument cluster and the center console. So those used to be two pieces. Now they're going to be a very single, simple piece.
What does that mean? Why? Is that good? Is that bad?
It is a style trend, and with everything off, it's generally very cool because it looks very simple and clean. With everything on, it feels like two different LED outputs, so it doesn't really matter that much in terms of functionality because there are still basically separate screens.
Hmm. Okay. What are you in these days? What are you driving?
I'm driving a vehicle that I'm surprised by how much I dislike. I am driving, speaking of Mazda, I'm driving the CX-90, which I generally like very much, but it's the plug-in hybrid version of that vehicle. And this is Mazda's own hybrid, not like we just talked about the CX-50 using a Toyota hybrid system. This is Mazda's own system, and it is regrettably clunky.
Mm.
The interplay between the electric motors and the gasoline engine is really It seems disorganized. The car surges forward. It decides to slow down. Throttle response is uneven. It doesn't even sound good. It is incredibly disappointing because the CX-90 otherwise is a very nice vehicle.
Let me hold you on that for a second.
Yeah.
That's really out of the norm for any manufacturer in this day and age to say, okay, this is clunky. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. And I've talked to other journalists. They've experienced the exact same issues, so I'm not a lone voice on this. But we recall this from the early days of Toyota. And the first generation and the second generation Prius, for example, suffered from these issues. And it takes an awful lot of software and an awful lot of really good engineering to make the electric motor and the regenerative braking and the gasoline engine work together as seamlessly as they can. And if you drive a modern Hyundai hybrid or a modern Toyota hybrid, they're really, really good. And it's a shame that Mazda doesn't seem to have this together yet.
And you would think that that's the kind of thing that would have been worked out on computers and really smoothed out before they got it to the production level.
You would think so. One of the issues is probably that the regular CX-70 and CX-90 are powered by a brand-new and very likable turbocharged inline six-cylinder engine that is very smooth. This is powered by a 2.5-liter four-cylinder engine from lesser Mazdas that is not especially pleasant to start with. And in this particular case, it's I think the whatever roughness is exacerbated by issues with the hybrid system.
Is part of this being exacerbated by the bean counters saying we need to get this product out now?
Almost certainly. Yeah, Mazda is actually doing really well in sales right now, and part of it is these new vehicles, these new large mid-size crossovers, the CX-70 and CX-90, and I think they thought they had some momentum going, and they wanted to rush out this hybrid. There's a lot of hybrid interest these days in the general public, and a lot of people want to just sort of catch that action while it's hot.
By the way, so speaking of sales, want to share something with you, a conversation we heard recently, and I know we have to break in a second. We recently had a conversation with some people at a dealership, and they were talking about the fact that they had a new general manager, and mm-hmm. one of the first things the general manager told them was, basically, don't worry about my commission. Sell the cars. Get them off the lot. Don't worry about my commission. So our question to you, there is a difference in the general manager's commission over and above the salesperson commission, and is that one of the reasons that the salesman gets up and says, oh, let me go talk to my manager?
Well, the let me talk to my manager thing is usually just a sales technique. That's to let you sit there and think about buying the car and making that work, and to make it seem like he's actually working some numbers, because there's no numbers to work. He knows how much he can sell the car yeah. for. Mm-hmm. There's no magic there. And that whole process usually is just to wear you down a little bit. But sales managers are generally on commission as well. So the same numbers, the percent over whatever base number that you can sell a vehicle for, the sales manager gets a piece of as well as his salary.
But the salespeople were saying that they really appreciated this new general manager's approach, that his mantra to them was
sell the cars. Don't think
yeah,
about
I guess
me.
They're going for volume over profit, I guess. And it might be, you know, depends on the dealership and the product and how much product they can get.
And how much they've got sitting on their showroom yeah. and the fact yeah. that they want to move it out for the 25s. We overheard one guy saying, I just don't understand. This was a potential customer. I don't understand how I can get good financing on a 24 and I can't get good financing on the 25. And we looked at each other and said, oh, they want to move the 24s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That's kind of a no-brainer.
And the guy's like, you know, his hands are in the air. I just don't get it. What's going on here? I said, okay.
Yeah, I think he's got a break, but one of the interesting things is floor planning, and most dealers borrow the money to pay for their inventory. So every day a car sits there, it costs them money.
Yeah.
So they want to get those off the lot as soon as possible.
We have to take a break. We'll be back with Tom Appel after this on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's one of Tom's car tunes. Tom, who is that, and what is that?
That is Charlie Christian with the Benny Goodman Sextet from way back in 1939.
Wow.
Flying Home. I love that. A lot of those old Goodman recordings with Charlie Christian are just spectacular.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Goodman was cool, too, that he worked with artists of color at the time when it was pretty controversial to do that.
Absolutely, yeah.
There was, I forget what the book was that I was reading, and it told the story of when Goodman was booked for a gig, I think it was in Las Vegas, and he wanted Charlie Christian to go with him, and apparently there was some blowback from the people that owned the venue.
He was going to have to stay in a different hotel.
And Goodman said, if Charlie doesn't come with us and stay with us, you can count me out. And that made
good
the difference.
You.
And they said, yeah.
Yeah, that was very bold back then.
Awesome.
We're talking with Tom Appel. He joins us a couple times a month to talk cars. He's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. I was chuckling because I went to your Facebook page, and folks can certainly follow you on Facebook.
But they should follow you on Blue Sky.
Yes.
Yes.
Car Guy Tom on Blue Sky.
But I did love the blog that you reprinted about the things that have survived: cockroaches, Keith Richards, and the Pontiac Vibe. I was like, okay, that's an attention-getting headline.
Yeah, the Pontiac Vibe was actually built for Pontiac by Toyota, and it was very similar to a vehicle that Toyota built for itself called the Matrix. And for whatever reason, these vehicles have proved to be indestructible. They just will not fail. And if you see a Pontiac on the road today, it is probably a Pontiac Vibe. I'm stunned by its resiliency. But, you know, the Matrix was based on the Corolla, and the Corolla has a legendary reputation for just lasting forever.
Is it just the fanboy wish list, or is there any truth to the rumors that I'm seeing increasingly in a lot of different places that at some point General Motors might consider resurrecting either Pontiac or Oldsmobile?
I seriously doubt they will do either. One of the interesting things that General Motors did a couple of years ago was resurrect the Hummer brand.
Yeah.
They're using it as a sub-brand at GMC,
mm-hmm.
and that's for electric vehicles. I can't imagine that they would do that for a couple of reasons. I think their dealership setup right now is very good for them. They have GMC and Buick paired off, Cadillac independent, and Chevy independent. And I think that's working super well for them. And to bring Pontiac back would mean that they would have to set up a new dealer network, bring back the brand, and decide what they want to do with it. You know, it would have to be probably an electric brand. And I guess an electric sporty brand is cool, but they went to such an effort to get rid of it.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah,
I'd love to see it come back, but I doubt it's ever going to happen.
And sadly, as with many things General Motors decided to let go, they let it go at the time when they were doing some of their best vehicles.
Yeah, Pontiac and Oldsmobile were probably producing and selling some of their nicest vehicles ever. And it was a shame that this happened. Oldsmobile had the Aurora.
Oh, yes.
Some really good styling. And if people might remember the Alero. It was a compact car.
Oh, yeah.
Very attractive. And actually selling in some volume. It was attracting young buyers. So they were doing nicely with that. And yeah, it's all just kind of a shame. Pontiac was importing the G8 from Australia, if mm-hmm. you remember that vehicle. Rear drive vehicle with a V8. Really a good car.
We got time for maybe one quick question, so let's quickly bring in, let's see, this is Ron. Hi, Ron, you're on WGN Radio with Tom Appel.
Hi, Steve and Johnny. First of all, Steve and Johnny, I've got an old Life After Dark t-shirt still in the wrapper.
Wow.
Those are highly collectible.
$50 on eBay.
Wow. Oh. But Tom, my question is, I drive a Ford Focus, a standard transmission stick shift, and I find it better than four-wheel drive. I have not put brakes on that car probably in 4 to 5 years because of my downshifting. And I'm just wondering, is there any stick shifts left on the market? I know they don't make them anymore, but what's left out there that you can still maybe scrape up?
For 2025, there are virtually no manual transmission vehicles left that anyone could afford. There's still a version of the Porsche 911. I think Volkswagen got rid of its stick shift Jetta. Subaru got rid of the stick shift Impreza. There's just nothing left out there anymore that's stick shift. And there's a bunch of reasons for this, not just public disinterest, but also because a lot of safety systems are incompatible with manual transmissions. But if you go back a couple of years, there are a lot of Jettas out there. That's kind of a fun car to drive with stick.
That's good. Thank you very much for checking in here, Ron. Real quick, in 30 seconds, Cadillac 2025 XT4, what are your thoughts? You like it? You
don't? The XT4 is fine. That is the compact crossover. It has been discontinued for 2025 for a strange reason. They want to use that factory for something else. But, yeah, nice little crossover. I like the turbo 2-liter engine a lot.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Tom.
Check out consumerguide.com and check out Car Guy Tom on on Blue Sky.
And in 2 weeks, when you join us, can we talk a little bit more about winter driving? Maybe do a little segment on tires or anything else that we need to know for winter driving?
I would love to do that.
All right. Great deal. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You never called timeout at the end of the game. What gives? There was no eagerness. Just make a T with your fingertips. And now they fired you for it.
Bye, Flutes.
Wait, bye-bye. Bye-bye, you blown it. You lost. The team was reeling. Oh, your faith was sealing. You lost. The team was reeling. But now you're gone, gone, gone. They cut Flutes.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio, and that is Dave Swirsky. Da Floos got fired, and
Footloose never sounded so good.
No,
the Floos cut loose.
But Gabe, do you agree? Gabe, the Bears management even screwed up firing him because they let him come out and do the press conference, and then a couple hours later, they fought. What an insulting. Bears management is just so strange.
Well, first, let me start off by saying we could all go home after that song now. But, you know, in all honesty, yeah, that was probably bad timing there, certainly, especially with the way Eberflus ended that conversation by saying, oh, I expect to coach the next game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they definitely should have probably had better timing on that because I would assume that they were certainly discussing it before he appeared at that Zoom call or whatever it was, press conference.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see it in full. I just saw clips on social media and saw everybody's reactions to it. But you know, obviously that could have been handled better. But now that Eberflus is gone and Thomas Brown has been elevated to interim head coach, he's going to get a 5-week audition to see if he can make himself a candidate for the full job next year. But also, too, this is also going to put Ryan Poles, a general manager, you know, under scrutiny here to see, you know, if the Bears can try to, I mean, obviously they can't salvage the season, but to see what kind of positivity they can get any more wins before this year is all over. So certainly a lot of uncertainty lies ahead. But, you know, you see the way the offense has progressed under Thomas Brown over these last few games. And you see that, you know, Caleb Williams is, you know, leading the Bears on scoring drives. Mm-hmm. He, you know, the offense is keeping this team competitive. And, you know, they're losing close games. It's not like...
Oh, it's crazy.
It's not like they're getting blown out by double digits and not making any effort. I mean, they're really...
It was literally down to the last play with the last couple games.
And that's the thing. So the Bears are in these games, and, I mean, they could have easily won, you know, a couple of them, if not all of them. So, like I said, there's some positivity that we can take from this, but also there's a lot of uncertainty that still lies ahead for this team.
I think I'm going to predict that the Bears will win a few of their remaining games, and I think that's going to embarrass Eberflus even more because I think he really was at the core of the problems for the Bears right now.
And you take a look at their schedule, I think one game to keep an eye on is certainly next week's game in San Francisco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even though the Bears haven't won there in many years, but, you know, they have a lot of their top players are injured. You know, they've had issues all year long. They haven't been consistent. They haven't been the team that, you know, that played Kansas City to overtime in the Super Bowl last season. So that's definitely a game I think the Bears may be able to do something with.
You're wrong. You're dead wrong.
We woke him up again. Sorry, OB.
We woke him up.
But But, you know, you take a look at the rest moving forward. It's the divisional games that are still remaining. Three more games against the division rivals that really concern me, that really are really going to test this team to see what they can prove towards the end of the year.
And one of those games is Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football, I believe that is the Minnesota game at Soldier Field.
Yes.
And then they will play Detroit on Thursday night, after the day after Christmas, at Soldier Field as well. So they're going to have a couple of times where they'll be on national TV where the whole country is going to see what this team is made of moving forward. So there's definitely a lot of pressure on the Bears moving forward.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb on this one. They face Green Bay again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to predict that with the management changes, they will beat Green Bay this time.
And wrap up the season.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
That would be nice.
It would certainly, obviously, ideally, if the Bears can win, you know, all five games, that would be great, because then they'd finish 9-8, but I don't think it's going to happen. But if they can pick up a couple of wins and still show progress, that'll be a building block moving forward. But again, of course, building blocks moving forward is what we've been dealing with since since Lovie Smith was fired. So this is the situation we continuously find ourselves in a decade later.
It's going to be interesting to see where Eberflus ends up, because I can't imagine that his phone is ringing off the wall. People saying, no. Oh, we really need you at our team.
He may not get another head coaching job anytime soon, but he will get, if not defensive coordinator, then certainly some sort of defensive assistant coaching job, whether it be a position coach or, quality control coach or analyst or something along those lines. So obviously, Eberflus has shown in a portion, at least, of the Bears games over the last couple of seasons that he can put together a decent defense. So that will certainly help him moving forward. But I think it'll be a while, if ever, that he gets another head coaching job.
Yeah.
Well, I want to segue away from football for a second, because the other thing that I'm keeping an eye on is this announcement of a Sox Fest at a different location on the south side. Gabe, have you seen that, and what do you think about it?
I have, and the reaction that I've seen is that the fans want the original Sox Fest convention back.
Yeah.
This is certainly scaled back from what it used to be. Obviously, the last one that the White Sox had was in 2020, and then after that, COVID hit.
Right.
And then they didn't bring it back, and now they're doing this instead. And I've seen a lot of Sox fans who aren't too happy about it, but it is what it is, and I do like the idea that they're going to bring the new manager, Will Venable, to talk to the fans here. Yeah. And this time, also, they're keeping it closer to the ballpark. I believe it's at the Romova Theater on Halls.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it'll definitely be closer to the ballpark. You won't have to worry about getting downtown, parking downtown, as you normally would for the
I like the
original
location.
Convention. Right.
Yeah.
But I think what it is that with a lot of Sox fans is they want what the original convention was, with all the pomp and circumstance and everything else that was that it was before COVID. But I think this is probably a more intimate setting that the team is trying to go for, and I think it's definitely worth giving a chance and see how it works out. But I understand why Sox fans want the original Sox Fest back, but at the same time, it's better than nothing, because the team didn't do this for 3 years now.
Yeah. And that's January 24th and 25th at the Romova Theater in Bridgeport. All right, before we break and you scoot back over to your computer, the update on your vehicle being held hostage by idiots that had you blocked in for days.
You wouldn't believe the number of people that we have had on email.
On Thanksgiving, yeah.
On Thanksgiving, personal friends and people who have been emailing us saying, what happened with Gabe's car? You want to give us the end of that story?
This past Monday morning, I was finally able to get my car out.
Again, to back up, you were parked in the Aqua Garage.
So last Friday night, I parked in the garage at the Aqua Hotel. I parked literally in the very last parking spot in the very bottom of the garage. I pulled in Friday night. I came out last Saturday morning, and there was an SUV blocking my way. I couldn't get out. I tried. Didn't have any luck. Had to wake up my wife at 5 a.m. to come pick me up. And then I came back Saturday afternoon. Tried to see if I can move my car out of that spot and get a better spot to where I'm not so congested. But not only was that SUV still there was another vehicle in front of it. So I was double boxed in. And then after last week's show, when I left a few hours later, that same initial SUV was still blocking me in. So again, I had to wake up my wife to come pick me up again. And I didn't even bother coming back later on Sunday because, you know, obviously the Bears were at Soldier Field and I didn't want to get caught up in Bears traffic. Right. So yeah. I waited until Monday morning, and on Monday morning I took an Uber to get down here. And sure enough, my car was free. I was able to pull out of the parking spot and drive it home. And I intended to go to the parking garage office and kind of, you know, voice my concerns about, as we had talked about, not just the fact that I was boxed in. I know we're focusing on my car here, but there was other vehicles that were boxed in.
Mm-hmm.
And with everybody coming downtown last week for the tree lighting and the Magnificent Mile Parade, the lack of staff at the garage at the time.
Right. No one.
It was beyond full. And there were people, you know, like I said, there were other cars that were blocked in. There were vehicles parking in handicapped spots, illegally parking in reserve spaces that they didn't pay for. They were just pulled their vehicles there. They were pulling in this garage. There's a level that has numerous spaces that are reserved for electric vehicles.
Mm.
And they were parked there too, and they weren't EVs. They were just parking there so they can have a place to park. And then, like I said, they were leaving their vehicles on the ramps in the garage, and this was like this the entire weekend. And
yeah.
Obviously, you know, several of our coworkers here park in the same garage as well, and they've told me similar stories that they noticed that it was just not a good situation. So, what I tried to get to the office of the garage, it was closed all week, I'm assuming for the holidays. So, next week I'm hoping to finally get in touch with somebody and raise the issue again.
Did you have to pay for 3 days parking?
No, I park monthly. So the good thing is I didn't have to pay anything extra, but it's just the fact that, like I said, not about me per se, but just, you know, like
in general.
Right.
Yeah.
And just how it's
a lousy way to run a business.
And just how dangerous that could have been. If there was a flood or a fire in that garage, there was going to be some problems because of, you know, just basically, you know, people just parking their cars wherever. There are two. So on the first level, not the first level, but the second level and the fifth level, and all the way, and there's a section where it's like an extension of those levels. If it's the best way I can describe it, unless you've parked there, you don't know what I'm talking about. But there's an extra row of spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And after those spaces were filled, the part of the lot where you would drive around to get in and out, those were filled with cars as well. And what made all this rough in the first place was that the first level has been closed off for the last month or so because they're doing construction.
Mm-hmm.
So that already kind of limited parking to begin with. And then with nobody there to say, hey, you can't park in here no more, we're closing off the garage, it's full, it just added. And there was just, you know, you just see a constant flow of cars driving around, people aimlessly driving around looking for parking. And I think that at the very least that, you know, when you got big events like this going on, down here. And of course, as you know, during the summertime, there's multiple events that happen during the course of the summer. Then, you know, they should probably have extra people there just to make sure that doesn't happen. So,
well, the good news is that you got
your car
out.
Yes.
Free at last.
Yes.
Gabe, thank you so much. We got a bunch of stuff to get to and a very little amount of time to get to it. So we'll take a break and see how much we get to.
Monday, so good to me.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Monday, Cyber Monday is coming up.
If you're looking for any kind of electronics like a laptop, Monday will be very good to you.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of really, really good deals for Cyber Monday, the biggest online shopping day of the year. And this hasn't been the norm forever. I mean, I think it's only been about, well, let me double check here. 2005 was the first time they launched the term Cyber Monday, coined by the National Retail Federation.
And didn't it really escalate during COVID?
Probably.
With more people staying home.
Looking for a deal. Amazon, let me ask you this question. Do you recall the year that Amazon was founded? Because I feel like Amazon's always been a part of our life.
I recall. Okay. Now, give me a second with this. I recall we were talking with Patrick Crispin, and he started talking about this thing called Amazon. And we said, what the heck is that? And he said, think of the Amazon forest. He says, this is a new website. And it's just, so what year would that have
been?
And
that Christmas, he gave us a gift card for Amazon.
Yes.
And we were like,
so what year was that?
What are we going to do with this? What are we going to buy with this?
This was how many years ago?
This is the 30th year.
No.
Yes. 1994 is when Amazon launched. It was the next year that eBay launched. So next year will be the 30th anniversary of eBay. And then the Walmart website came around just in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And I mention those because, of course, those are also very big on Cyber Monday because they fall under the heading of cyberspace.
Right.
Shoppers quickly grew accustomed to adding items to a virtual shopping cart rather than a physical one.
I'm going to pause you there for a second. As you're checking out the websites, if you get emails and if they're saying, oh, here's this wonderful Amazon deal or whatever, do not click on the emails. Go to Amazon.com, put in the item, and search on Amazon's website. There are so many fake emails going out trying to lure you into clicking on a link that gives them stuff they shouldn't have.
Like your credit card number.
So go to Amazon.com, go to whatever the website is, and then search for whatever the thing is you're after.
Well, just when you think that everyone is doing their shopping online, did you hear what happened on Black Friday? And Julian, you were working on Black Friday, the morning of Black Friday. Was there a lot of talk about how out around Aurora with the outlet malls, traffic was stopped, roads were blocked, and the police put out the word, if you don't have to be here to shop, do not come here. It's an absolute nightmare. And I remember the first year that that outlet mall opened, and we were on the air that Thursday night after Thanksgiving into Friday morning, and people started calling us at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. We're sitting on a ramp. We can't get into the parking lot at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. So, and that was a few years ago, but still. Was there much talk about it on Friday when you were working?
No, none of us were aware of this.
Really?
Because that was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I was watching some of Channel 9's coverage throughout the day. Eric Rung was over in Schaumburg, but nothing on Aurora.
Well, I just came across, I had to laugh because there was a time when I would ask, when I was doing traffic, I would ask if I could work on Black Friday.
Yeah.
Because number one, it gave me an excuse to be up and out early because I would leave from my shift and then immediately go shopping. But it was so much fun to just do shopping center traffic. The roads weren't bad on Black Friday. People weren't going to work. But the backup going into, well, Old Orchard and out at Woodfield.
I've actually done that before when I did traffic for CLTV back in the day. I actually had worked a Black Friday, and I actually worked the morning shift. So, and I had done that too, where I was focusing on, you know, like the expressways and tollways near malls and mall traffic and itself, because it gives you something to talk about. Otherwise, you're just rambling the same travel times over and over again. So that's actually fun. It gives you something different to do. But morning shift, however, doesn't work too well for me.
But if you're going out to the malls, remember you have to be careful at some of the malls. I think it's the Woodfield Mall where they do have the rotating
I remember the first year that I revealed that the parking lot rotates, and people said, oh, that explains why my car is never where I left it.
Because it's the Woodfield Mall, and I think maybe they've implemented that at some other malls, but
it's a slow
some of the
rotation.
Parking lots,
so if you're just in and out of the mall, you probably will not notice it. It's a slow rotation.
It's to facilitate parking for new people coming into the mall.
But if you spend a lot of time, I think Woodfield is the best example. You spend a lot of time in that mall and you come out and your car is not where you left it. You spent too much time in the mall. As simple as that. It just moved on you. It happens every time.
And you know this is true because you heard it on the radio.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. let's not wait till sunlight. The timing now feels just right. I'm coming over to you. Darling, go put on your snowshoes. On second thought, let's no shoes, not where we're going to. We'll stop before the dawn and waste the day. Heralded by wispy clouds and gray. And if you get to choose where and when you can be, I hope you choose right here, right now with me.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's the Empty Pockets. Oh, boy.
I love that song.
It's so good. That is one of the songs they did live in studio with us, and we have videos. And watch our blog and our Facebook page, and we'll let you know when the videos are up, but that's going to happen over the weekend.
And Julian tells me that there are now four videos that we're going to be posting.
There are indeed.
I've played the three over and over.
Yeah.
So they were really, really on, just the two of the Empty Pockets.
And don't forget Sunday, Space, Sunday night at Space, Empty Pockets for their Christmas show.
Doors open at 7 o'clock. Showtime is 8 o'clock. Tickets are only $25 and $35.
Space is absolutely one of our favorite. It's a great, as we call it, a great listening room. Good
really
acoustics, good people, and a terrific, terrific band. So,
yeah.
And if you go see the Empty Pockets, tell them we sent you.
Yes, tell them we sent you. There's a bar in the area, but there's no required drink minimum.
No.
So if you want to get a Coke, you can get a Coke. If you don't want anything, you don't have waitresses bugging you throughout the show.
There's a restaurant connected, so you can get pizza. And yes, you can get gluten-free food there, too.
And you can bring it back to your table, too, once you have a reserved table.
We should mention that next week, we will not be starting at 9 o'clock. There is the Big Ten championship game, so we will start after the Big Chen. Big Chen?
The Big Chen.
Yeah, see, I'm running out of the good words. We're into the final 25 minutes.
I hate a Big Chen.
The Big Ten championship, so we should be starting somewhere around 10:45. Next week, we're going to talk with a fascinating woman. Her name is Peggy Brown. You may not know her name, but if you have anything to do with kids, I think you may know some of the games or toys or things that she's been involved with inventing.
Unbelievable history of toys that Peggy has invented or saw to it that it made it to the public. And she's got some great stories. And she's kind of a local woman. She's right up in Milwaukee.
Yeah. And you may have seen her on with Rachel Ray, too.
Yes, as a regular guest expert with Rachel Ray.
Also next week, Patrick Crispin will join us. We'll talk computers. We will also we'll get to some of the things we weren't able to finish up when Patrick was on with us last. We will also talk about some holiday gift suggestions. So that's a little bit of what is coming up next week. And yes, we're getting more people texting already to say, will Johnny do a little more gluten-free holiday recipe?
I'll have a recipe for you next week. Yeah. This week, I had a couple people ask me if, besides cookies, if I could give a candy recipe that was gluten-free. Or maybe they thought there was no such thing. But I have a candy recipe, and that will be posted. It is the Payday Bars, closest thing to what you buy as a candy bar. And it really, really tastes just like a Payday. Super simple to make. No baking is required. You get a whole bunch in the recipe. I know I do not want to hear from people that say, well, there's so much sugar. Again, I'm not suggesting you eat the whole pan.
You don't have to eat it.
No. You make it and share it with your friends that you want to fatten up. Just go ahead and fatten them up. And you'll look really skinny if everybody else is fat. Do it.
You learned that when you were a waitress, right?
I
you
did.
Always used to give big portions to everybody.
Whenever I was dieting, which was about 300 days out of the year, when I was a waitress at the Town and Country restaurant, I hate to admit this, but a pie was supposed to get 8 pieces of pie out of it. And if they were lucky, they got 7 pieces. Typically, it was 6 pieces. And of course, that meant that the big eaters like to sit by me because they would get huge pieces of lemon meringue pie, which was made in the Town and Country Bakery, which was to die for. It was about 4 inches high with this ginormous, beautiful meringue. And I did that because when I was dieting, I was always so hungry. I would just fatten up everybody else.
But you, as a waitress, you had a habit of over-serving your customers. Wasn't yours the restaurant where they it was the first to have this, no, you can't over-serve them drinks, you can't be nice to your favorite customers, you had to...
That was at Holiday Inn.
Okay.
When I was a cocktail waitress at the Holiday Inn, we had the first computerized bartender. And this was in 1975, and people were not computer literate. I mean, we were just like, we threw up our hands and said, what does this mean? And they said, well, you just walk up to the machine and you push ice or no ice, and you push the spirit that you want to go in, and then the mixer that you want, and you put your glass underneath it, and it spits it out. And people hated it.
But that way you couldn't give a little something extra to your favorite customers.
You couldn't be pouring maybe a fingerful extra or whatever. And your customers knew this, and it failed miserably. I don't think we kept it for more than 6 months because we weren't getting any business and we were getting lousy tips as a result of it. And that's all because they didn't want to pay a bartender.
And a lot of your clientele was businessmen from out of town.
Yes. And they knew when they asked for a specific kind of alcohol, they knew if it was their alcohol.
Right.
And when this machine was spitting out generic stuff, we paid the price. We didn't get any decent tips. So we revolted and they hired the bartender back.
Speaking of that kind of thing, be a good tipper. If you're going out someplace for a holiday meal, this is a very busy season, and the people who are your servers, they're doing their darndest to handle some serious crowds, and be nice to them.
And it's becoming very common to see service charges added on bills.
Yeah.
Those are not charges that are going in the pocket of your wait staff. Those are charges that, for example, the restaurant says, to deal with increased costs, we're adding 3% to your bill. If you don't like that, tell us, we'll take it off your bill.
I was impressed with the one restaurant we recently saw that did that, because they're the first one that I've seen that said, if you don't like this, tell us and we'll take it off your bill.
And 3% doesn't sound like it's going to break the bank, but it's the principle. Just raise the prices. Okay, they don't want to put out new menus, I guess. But the bottom line is, your wait staff is not getting that money. That is not extra money to make up for their lousy wages.
That's why usually we try to just leave something in cash for whoever it is that has been waiting on us.
Oh, I hate when they have an automatic...
Yeah.
fee that they're going to charge and claim that that's going to go to the wait staff, because I want to see it go in their pocket.
Yeah.
I'm that kind of person.
Uh-oh.
I know.
Lights are
already
flashing. And I hear...
Oh.
Yep.
That's Bob.
There's Big Plug Bob on his Zamboni.
He's cruising by.
Yep.
He's getting the joint all fixed up.
That means it is time for our last call. So if you would like to be our last caller... 312-981-7200. That number again is
312-981-7200.
And you can win some goodies from this here radio station. You don't have to have anything really pithy to say.
Or important.
None of that.
You can just, if you could sit up and hold the phone and string a couple sentences together, we'd be delighted to talk with you.
As long as you haven't won anything from this here radio place in the past 60 days.
Or 2 months, whichever comes first. Mm-hmm. We have had a busy show tonight. If we touched on something that you want to comment on, you can do that. If you've got big plans for Sunday, if you're going to hang up the phone and go have dinner, as we will be doing in just about, probably by 3 o'clock.
Yeah, we haven't decided what we're going to.
What's it
going to
be?
Yeah.
I don't know. A hamburger.
We got to have something that's good, that goes good with watching Cop Rock.
Oh, great. And we have a whole DVD set.
Of yeah!
Yay!
So maybe it's a big meal. Okay.
I'll be seeing the rest of the world Sunday night. I'm bleary-eyed.
Okay.
312-981-7200 if you'd like to be our last caller. This is something we do every Saturday night, Sunday morning to wrap up the five-hour show. And again, to clarify for those folks who said, what do you mean about next week? There's going to be a Big Ten basketball playoff game that's going to bump into our show. It may be 10, 10:30, 10:45 before we get on.
The best guess is we'll be on at 10:45.
Yes. But be here, because we'll talk about you if you don't show up.
Mm-hmm.
So be here. And we have a big show planned for next week as well. We'll come back with our last caller after this on WGN.
It's that time again. We gotta say goodnight.
Oh, yeah, goodnight.
You know it's getting late. Tomorrow is another day, my friend. All right, people.
Yep.
It's time to go home.
Yep.
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 Losing time.
Losing time.
Head on out. So let's go. You don't have to go home.
And don't forget to tip your server.
But you can't stay here.
No, you can't stay here. And
on that subject,
I have to.
You have to stay here?
Maybe for a few extra minutes past you guys.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say something
pithy. So should we tip you on the way out?
No, I was going to say.
They don't tip us.
Lister says, should you tip for carry out? Well, of course. The food doesn't just magically get put in a bag and given to you. Somebody's got to go to the process of checking and double-checking and putting in extra ketchup and napkins and plastic forks and whatever else you've requested in your carry-out bag.
But then should you do that before or after you have checked the bag to make sure everything is in the bag?
Well, yeah. And if you have somebody from a DoorDash or a Grubhub delivering, you better be tipping. Or you'll never want them to be delivering to your house again because you.
Not a DoorDash thing, but there was a, who was it? It was a friend of ours, I think, from Florida that was going to use their air fryer for the first. It was their a brand new air fryer.
Bought a brand new air fryer.
And they have this. They had it in the box they bought from Costco.
Mm-hmm.
And they opened the box. No air fryer. Rocks in the box.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, was that from somebody in Florida? Was that somebody from this here radio place?
It might have been from here, because it made me think of the night Patrick Crispin was on the air with us, and he was livid because he just purchased a new toaster,
mm-hmm.
and when he got it home and took it out of the box, it was a very, very old toaster that had been put in the box, and the new toaster apparently was kept. But the box was taken back, sealed up, and nobody bothered to check it. And so they got their money back, so they got a free toaster. And I've often told you that there are certain stores that I've been to. I go to customer service, and you see people returning things, and nobody's popping up in those boxes to look inside. So
mm-hmm.
this was a case of an air fryer. It was actually a box of rocks.
Mm-hmm.
You think it would make noise, though, when you picked it up. Unless it's a couple of bricks.
Unless you think the air fryer has some loose parts in it.
Yeah, right. The drawer is rattling around when you pick it up. I think we're going to air fry something when we get home because it makes it quicker.
Okay.
Yes.
That works for
me. All right. We got a whole bunch of people, and I'm going to, it's my turn to choose,
okay.
And I'm going to go with number four.
Okay, number four, and that would be, number four is Jeff. Jeff, you're on WGN. Where are you calling from?
I'm in Homewood, Illinois.
Well, welcome to the show, Jeff. How are you tonight?
I'm okay. I'm glad I got through finally because I had some questions for you.
Okay, lay it on us.
I used to work for a newspaper.
Which newspaper?
From about 1981 to 2000.
Mm-hmm.
For which newspaper?
Time frame did you guys come to WGN?
I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit. So which newspaper, and then what was your question about WGN?
I work for the Star Community newspaper in Chicago Heights.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two twice a week publication.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Wednesday nights I was out overnights. And I was trying to figure out where you came into that equation. When, what year did you start at WGN?
I started at WGN Christmas Eve of 1984, and Johnny joined me on Valentine's Day of 1985.
And what
then,
shift, what were you doing at that time?
Well, when I first started, I filled in for Bob Collins on Christmas Eve. So I was doing, at that time, Bob was doing afternoons. Right. And then when Johnny joined me, I was doing an evening show.
And we had a regular Saturday night show.
Right.
And then it was a matter of just a couple of months before we got a Sunday show with the Saturday show. And then we were hired full-time to work at that point, it was the 2 a.m. to 5:30 a.m.
Right.
shift leading into the Bob Collins show.
And eventually, it wound up being from 11 at night till 5 in the morning, 6 hours a night.
Yep.
Yeah. I remember website Wednesday nights and all that kind of stuff way back when.
Yeah. That was a very popular show because people were just getting into computers and we were all lost and confused and scared.
As we still are.
Yes. And so Patrick was there at the beginning as he is still today.
Yeah, those are the good old days.
So you are up at this hour just listening to the radio?
Yeah, I'm kind of a night owl. From all those years working overnights like that, I can't still do that.
Yeah, that's kind of our story, too. Friday night into Saturday morning, I don't think I went to bed at 4 a.m. and you went to bed about 7 a.m. So
yeah.
We're kind of goofed up as a result of those years of working overnight as well.
And it was interesting when we were out of my brother's in Munster, Johnny was actually able to get to sleep somewhere around midnight, one or something. But I'd be up
all night
half
long.
The night and finally getting to sleep about 7 in the morning and then wake up at the crack of noon.
Yes.
I was going to tell you, I called for a while and gave up calling. And then I heard Muriel Anderson a couple of months ago.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I took guitar lessons with her a long time ago.
Really? Where did you take the lessons?
She was did a brief stint. She was teaching at Wheaton College.
That's right.
Sure.
Yeah. In fact, tonight was her big homecoming show.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
The Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to several of those.
Yeah.
And, we should have asked earlier for somebody to call and review because Steve Dawson and Diane Christensen were going to be her guests at the show.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding us about that, Jeff.
I wasn't able to make it this year.
Well, she had, for many years, she was at Downers Grove High School, and then the show became so big that they've moved to another venue, a church in the Downers Grove area. And I think this was probably like her 26th or 27th year.
And her mom still bakes goodies for the intermission.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, it's nice to meet you after all these years. Hang on for a second. We'll get some information from you off the air, and we're going to send you an official WGN T-shirt for tuning in. And again, thanks for hanging in there for all these years.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Again, we remind you that next week, we don't start at 9. We start at roughly 10:45.
I'm going to say it's going to be earlier than that, but that's just me.
Okay. Well, then you can start earlier, and I'll,
okay.
I'll get here when I get here. And next week, we will be talking with Peggy Brown about some of her toys, games, inventions, and some good Christmas gift ideas. Then Patrick Crispin will join us, and we'll talk about some computer problems and also some holiday gift suggestions.
Mm-hmm. I've had so much fun looking at toy ideas for 8-year-old Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, they're so sophisticated nowadays.
Yeah.
It's just, it's scary. I'm afraid to get him something that we're supposed to show him how it works because I'm going to be like, I don't know. Because I don't read manuals. I don't read instructions. So it's got to be something.
I've noticed.
I may stick with jigsaw puzzles. How's that? Lister from 847 area code said the Zamboni reminded him that the Zamboni is celebrating its 75th anniversary next year.
Well, we need to party.
Or maybe it's this year.
So is it?
The Zamboni company is celebrating their 75th anniversary. Will we be getting a new machine for the new year?
Well, we need to ask Big Plug Bob if we're going to get a new Zamboni for the new year. And, inquiring minds want to know.
Yes.
It was originally called an ice resurfacer.
Well, that's just boring, isn't it? And what was it, a man named Zamboni that...
Frank Zamboni.
You know what? If you got to have a colorful name, that's a good name.
Yeah.
No, don't do it.
So many lines are going. I'm not going there. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show. And and we would like it if you would subscribe to our Facebook page because we're getting close to 10,000.
Yep.
And also check out our blog, that's steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, and we'd like if you would subscribe to that. No charge, and we don't spam you. You just get an email whenever we
something
do a new
posted.
Blog post.
And real quick, a listener from 630 said the Muriel Anderson concert was absolutely delightful.
Good
to hear. Yes.
Not at all surprised. Julian, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob, thank you. Gabe, thank you.
Ron, thank you. And all the ships at sea, including you listeners, thank you. All 18 states that checked in tonight.
We'll talk to you next week.